Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Congratulations. Your morning just got a bit classier. A media legend. A ferocious linebacker, a clueless producer, and you.
Searching for a replacement window online? Visit windownation.com today.
So raise a glass and act accordingly. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis on a Thursday. Chops in for Bo. James hanging out with you for the next 3 hours as we carry you through a bunch of stuff. It's not a very good day, but we're going to get you through
not
it.
Not a great sports day. Not a great, yeah.
Yeah,
it's all
the best
right.
way
got
we
Jackets
can.
Hockey. We have to wait until 8:30. Got to take a shot of espresso at about 4 this afternoon. But
yeah, I mean, that's going to be – I may as well do the prep for tomorrow during the Jackets game and then maybe sleep in a little extra. I don't know. Figure something out there.
Sleep in, what is that? I don't even know what that means. Sleeping in.
Get up at 6:30 maybe.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
good. That's good.
So, I'm going to try to keep it serious because, as we know, classically serious person Bobby Carpenter has a hard time apparently taking some of my takes seriously. So, we're going to try to keep it level for you. But I actually want to start with something a little more fun because we had that great day yesterday. And James, I know that you like to get out there and do things whenever the weather's great.
Of course.
So I want to know what you did yesterday, and I hope that you were able to get out. I know you're dealing with the new baby and everything, but I hope that you were really able to enjoy some of that day that we had.
Yeah, I was. We were able to, so right after the show ended, I went downstairs, grabbed the wife, and we went over to, Glacier Ridge Metro Park out here near us, and we did a nice little run. First time for her. Running outside since having the baby, and she crushed it. She did better. We ran 2.85 miles, and she did better than I thought she was going to do as far as being able to consistently run without having to kind of hold up and walk. So she did a phenomenal job.
When did she have to give up running?
She gave up. I mean, she really didn't do much running. I probably would say – That's a good question.
I'll give you this. She's probably ran more recently than I have, so that's good news.
Oh, she definitely has. Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, she ran in her third trimester.
Okay.
So yeah, she already accomplished way more than you. But that
I haven't ran since my third semester of college. Probably
the other day I went and ran, and I did not plan on doing this. This was a total almost mistake. Like how do I even word this? I went to go get a run in outside. It was like 48 degrees. This was on – what day was this? Let me look it up. I have it – oh, Saturday. It was on Saturday. Okay. And so, you know, it was nice outside, and I wore a sweatshirt. It was, like I said, 48. And I started to run through one of the neighborhoods around here. I didn't really know how long it would be, but, you know, me gauging mileage in my head, I was like, oh, this would be around 2.5 miles. It would be great. It ended up being 3.75 miles. And it's a lot longer than I wanted to go. I try to aim for between 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be a distance runner by any means. But I did it all without stopping. So 3.75 in 34 minutes, I was pretty happy. I was pretty proud of myself, for that accomplishment. The hard thing was on Saturday was that some of the paths were flooded because the snow was melting, right?
Yeah.
So obviously the neighborhood has some drainage issues, but then again, I'm not sure they really, is that really a drainage issue when you have, you know, 8 to 10 inches of snow melting within a week? Probably not. Probably just, you know, part of the deal. But there was parts that were in the shade that were still, you know, ice, slush, and so that gets a little dicey.
I ran into that problem just on like a normal walk, like around the sidewalks. It's like,
yeah.
It was all clear and I turned down one street and it just had a little too much shade and they clearly hadn't shoveled very well and it was just ice. And I'm like, well, like, all of a sudden I'm slipping and sliding when I was just,
I had to make a mental toughness decision as I went to go run. The original path I wanted to do was to run up past this elementary school and the path was covered in water, but I thought it was like going to be an inch. So I was like, I'll just walk through it. And as I go to walk through it, the first step, it covers my shoe. and I'm in running shoes, so these are not waterproof.
Uh-huh.
And now I have a decision to make. You're within the first quarter mile of your run. It's 46, 48 degrees outside. You're in a sweatshirt and just running pants. My toes, I know, are going to be freezing. And I'm like, either you can tap out and say, well, the hell with it. Wasn't, you know, or you can just run through it. And I ran through it. But, I was pretty fired up about that. I was pretty ticked off the fact that I stepped in. Nothing's worse than trying to do anything when your feet are completely soaked.
I remember that, like playing high school football. Like,
yes, you get so sweaty in 2 days.
That first time in the morning, you'd hit the ground and the water would go through your pants, and then it was just terrible for the rest of the time. At least it was cooler in the morning, but there was always that dew on the grass, and there was nothing you could do about it. You were just going to have wet toes, and your pants were going to get wet the first time and deal with it the whole time. Speaking of clothing, at a time like this, yesterday it got up to 60 degrees, and it's always funny this time of year how people don't know how to deal with it. You see some people in just t-shirts and a short, and that's probably a little too far in that direction, but closer. But you also, then you can walk by somebody who's still wearing his parka and like a stocking cap.
Yes.
And I don't know how people make these decisions. Just look at the weather or just step outside for a second. I thought yesterday was perfect that if you were just outside, maybe if you're going on a run, you could get down to the t-shirt. But if you were just outside, a hoodie was the perfect option yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. You still needed some protection out there. It's not that warm, and don't be fooled by what it is now today, because it's going to be sunny again. It says partly cloudy early on, and should get some sun, but the high is 42. You got to pay attention to the numbers here, you know.
Pay attention to the scores.
Yeah, and act accordingly off of that. But it actually looks like it'll be partly cloudy until about 4 o'clock p.m.
Yeah, I get a notification every evening on my phone that's like the next day's high and low, and it's a roller coaster ride right now because it's always like yesterday. Going into yesterday, it was like 18 degrees warmer. And then going into today, it was like it's going to be 14 degrees colder. It's just up and down right
Ohio.
Now. But at least we're above freezing and the sun is out. So that's
and if you keep in perspective, what was so miserable about a year ago when everything started to lock down in March, which is we'll be at 52 weeks next week here. I believe it was March 13th was the first day that we kept the girls home, even before they closed them.
Yeah, it was cold at the beginning. I remember.
It was cold, and it started to rain all of March and early April. I remember just being constantly wet and being like, we're locked down, we can't go anywhere, and we can't even go outside because it's cold and wet.
Yes.
So I'm taking advantage of this sunshine because even though I see that, you know, next week we have 66 and 68, that's all well and good. But when you're seeing rain in the forecast, I'm like, oh gosh, I hope that's just a couple days and not the extended, like, you know, we're going to have 15 days in a row of water because that's exactly what it was a year ago. It's exactly what it was a year ago.
We got to get to mid-April and then we're good. So
that's
we still got a month to kind of get out of Dodge, but hopefully we can keep up and it doesn't have to be every day, but 1 or 2 days a week, it's, you know, mid-50s and sunny. Just give me that. That's all I need. Something like that. We can't have these 13 straight rainy days, those kind of things. The Jackets were on kind of a streak of rainy days until Tuesday night where they beat the Red Wings at home. Now they're back on the road playing another struggling team in the division. The Red Wings are clearly the bottom of this Central Division, and the Stars are arguably the second worst team. They've just been so up and down this year as far as when they can compete. They were hit with COVID. Then they got some games pushed because of the winter storms down in Texas. So they've been all over the place. They started out pretty hot coming, you know, they didn't even play the first few games, and then they come out and they were kind of hot, but then they've just, their scoring has really slowed down. So this is another chance for the Jackets to keep that good momentum going. And I looked this up. There are fans allowed in their arena, about 4,200 allowed in, I think it's American Airlines Center.
Nice. So no masks, no nothing, right? I mean, it's Texas.
I was reading that was one of the reasons I looked it up. They could go to 100% if they wanted. They're not doing that.
I think what you're going to see there in the state of Texas is a lot of businesses, and the poor business owners. That's the first thing I thought of. Like, look, I'm glad there's optimism that we are opening things up. Now I believe that's like ripping open a Band-Aid when the wound isn't healed yet and you're just going to bleed again. But, I hope I'm wrong on that. But, again, I'm glad that somebody is – it just points to good signs, right? You think,
yes.
As long as there's another spike. But it points to, okay, great, at least one of our states is leaning that way, although it might be – do I agree with how aggressive it is? I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but
just rip off everything. Just go in. It's like,
just forget it. You know what? Enough. That's, I mean, he literally was like, enough is enough. All right. Okay. Anyway, but I think what the poor business owners are going to have to turn people away who are definitely going to be, you know, no maskers. Well, the governor said we don't have, well, I don't care. It's my business. Get out. I'm like, oh yeah. Gosh, we could do a full reality show on these encounters.
I mean, but we've seen that even when even when it was governor mandated in states,
yes,
that you had to wear masks.
Of course.
So
we
now that
yes.
they can point to that and yes. say, but it's still going to be a private yeah. business and it's their choice to do it
yeah.
as the business
No question.
Owner.
No question. I just, if you want to, yeah, I'm not even going to go down this road.
Some of these videos will pop up on
I was reading an article on
weeks.
How someone, the whole, I guess, Republican Party in the Northeast Ohio is just bashing Gonzo for voting to impeach Trump, basically saying that what he did would be like when the team needs him most, he went in the locker room and put on a Michigan uniform. Some of the quotes in that article were quite ridiculous. But anyway, I think, you know, when you look at this team right now, the Jackets, they have chops a – they have a chance here against another team who I think is struggling to find themselves. We talk about it's been a constant conversation on here about Torts and the unique circumstances they're under. They're going through the same thing in Dallas. This is the team that was in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
And they're dealing – we mentioned the disruptions, the team that actually had a COVID outbreak, a team that has dealt with severe weather down there and all the issues around that with the power outages and then the ice storms and all the stuff that
yeah, and just
Texas
imagine
how through.
Hard that is, not just it cancels games, but as an athlete to
yeah
stay
you're trying to worry
your
about
P's
your family
yeah.
yeah you're worrying about your family, you can't go to the rink, you can't, you're not mobile, that's how many of those guys lost power, right? I mean, there's a mm-hmm. whole thing that they're dealing with, so they're struggling to find themselves as well, and I'm sure their fan base is saying, well, why are we, I mean, we were in the cup last year, you know. So I think sometimes when it comes to pro sports, you got to have patience. And too often you'll see poor franchises, which was the Browns before they got, you know, this together this year with Stefanski, and they mm-hmm. had it with Barry and a new vision. But how many times have the Browns fired a coach after 2 years? Like, a coach can't even take a deep breath in there, and they have a new coach or a new GM or a new this or a new that, a new quarterback. And I think sometimes we just got to take a deep breath and relax a little bit. Understand that it can be both. Yes, are we underperforming to our expectations? Yes, we are. Are the Dallas Stars underperforming to what they just did a year ago? Of course they are. But let's have a little patience. And there's two teams trying to fight, you know, find each other, really salvage the season. And so you wonder, what do they have to prove tonight? To me, it's winning. You have to win. Like, Jackets are on a win, like yeah. a must-win basis still.
And I think that's where the expectation
is. It's getting past the point-per-game average, right? So you win against the Red Wings, but you can't lose. You can't lose tonight, right? Let's get a couple games in a row. You want to get it to a point where you're winning three, losing one. When, you know, not a one-on-one deal. So we're at a point now because of the five-game losing streak. You kind of wipe that away, right? You got to find a way to stack some games here. And this is against a team. There will be juice. It'll be better for them to be on the road, away from all this stuff, away from the chatter. There's fans there, even though it's not a ton. You'll want to still silence that crowd and look up. I mean, trust me, it gets you fired up when you look up in the crowd, no matter how big the crowd, and, you know, someone's giving you the bird or telling you that you suck at life. I mean, it's something about that naturally gets you fired up to play. So I'm looking for tonight. I don't care what it all looks like. I want to win. That's yeah. all I want. I want a W. Of course, you'd want it to look better and the power play be efficient and the control of the puck. No, I want a W. If we get W's and it looks awful, it's better than looking great and losing. This team is way past moral victories right now.
I want them to keep looking energized out there. I don't want to see those terrible turnovers in your own
yes.
defensive zone. Things like
right.
that. Clean that stuff up. The scoring will come. Yeah, sometimes it's hard and sometimes it feels like you're hitting the post a ton in a game, but just keep firing. Don't be so low on the shot count. That was one of the greatest things about the Detroit game
yep.
is how much they outshot them, especially that like second half of the second period.
Yep.
And that's when they took the lead and the game was over and they didn't
yep.
even have to worry about the third period. So keep stuff like that up. We'll have Shelly time in the 11 o'clock hour to go more over that game. And we're going to stick with it as well. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to talk to Austin Ward after we got the news of when OSU spring camp is going to be. We've got tons of news on quarterbacks as well in the NFL. Up next, the Jackets got their needed win on Tuesday, but what are we expecting from them now? That, and you'll hear from Torts next on Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
Bishop and Laurinaitis is presented by Window Nation. Searching for a replacement window? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
If you say something with confidence, then you can't be wrong.
I don't even know.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan. If you want to get an amazing car or truck deal right now, maybe an SUV, maybe a minivan, whatever floats your boat, you need to head over to Germain Toyota of Columbus. Their award-winning brand new 2021 Tacoma is going for $259 per month with no money down. That deal is good for 39 months. Or if you want to grab their Corolla, which is always a win, how about $188 per month? Same thing, no money down. All offers are good for those that qualify. They got the best pricing in town and exceptional, exceptional customer service. See them, 5711 Scarborough Boulevard, or online, germaintoyota.net.
Chops in for Bo today, Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan. We're talking about the Jackets right now, and it kind of struck me in the break there, thinking about this stretch of games. You got the one of the few single-off games of the season, just one game against Detroit at home. You welcome the fans back in. They get a much-needed win after coming off five straight losses, and now you've got a two-game shutdown in Dallas against the Stars. I wasn't thinking about this at the time because it's really a one-game track right now for the Blue Jackets to just keep everything in front of them and figure it out one day at a time and maybe get back into the playoff picture. But right now, it's just each individual game. But looking at it now, man, so Dallas is definitely some winnable games, and Detroit is obviously a winnable one, and they did win it. But what if they had lost to Detroit, and then they go into this Dallas game down, losing six straight, and then – so this is what could have happened. This team could have just completely spiraled out. And the season – I think if they would have lost Detroit, Dallas, Dallas, the season would have just been over, essentially, effectively. So.
Yeah.
It was big for them to come out, and we're going to play this sound from Torts. And just looking back on Tuesday's win over Detroit, and I think this can show you a way for them to move forward.
I thought our team was just more poised with the puck. They weren't afraid to make a play. You get a lead, too. You score a couple of quick ones to go up 3-1. We were freer. I think there was a lot more ice. I think some of the other teams we've played, they've checked more in certain parts of the ice where we've had struggles to get through. Let's be fair about it. Detroit was banged up. They had a few people out. I don't want to take anything away from us, and I don't want to disrespect Detroit. It was a game that everybody contributed. Everybody got on the ice, and I thought there was some flow to it anyway, offensively.
Forget Detroit and their situation. The Jackets needed a win, and they got a win against an NHL team. So that's number one. Number two, they actually went out there and they played the way that Torts had been talking for the last 2 weeks as they had been reeling through this and trying to figure things out. So they put that out on the ice. So that's, you know, step one to getting to there. And then the other thing about it is now you can make that a building block. And it's a little... The thing that concerns me a little bit with the idea of an identity for the Blue Jackets is we know what it used to be, but then Torts talking about how they had a hard time kind of getting through teams that were checking more and stuff like that, that doesn't sound like the Blue Jackets to me. So maybe they are finding their identity, but I don't think it's going to be what we used to see from the Jackets.
Yeah, I think that's the first thing that stuck out in his comments, Chops, the fact that when you thought about the Jackets the last couple of years, you thought about, yes, we want to get in that physical fist fight with teams. We don't want to be wide open. You know, we don't want to have wide open spaces. That doesn't serve us too well. And now we've morphed to a team that wants to have a little more wide open ice. And so I think there is an identity shift. And that's fine.
And you hope they're finding it, though.
Yes,
that's
but
the
usually
thing.
Those things take off seasons. So that's the unique thing. You know, as you look at the standings, if you were just going to look at it lazily, you'd say, we're playing the team that's in the bottom of the Central. The next few games. Mm-hmm. But that's fool's gold because you mentioned, I don't think you understand it. The Jackets have played 24 games. The Stars have only played 17. So the amount of games in hand.
Even comparing their point percentage isn't enough because the Stars just haven't played enough games to really figure out where they're at.
Right. And so the frustrating thing is you have to start winning and get on a streak here because every single team ahead of you has games in hand on you. There's only one team in Detroit that's played more games than you have in this whole division. So if you are a Jackets fan and if you're the team itself, you know you have to start stringing these things together. And it's a perfect opportunity to do so when Dallas is a team that just hasn't played a whole ton. So it's not like they're a fully formed machine. And then you have to make up ground on the Panthers and you're going to see Dallas again. And then we've talked about this, last time we were hosting the show together, Chops, about the stretch against Carolina. Four mm-hmm. games in a row against the Hurricanes. You're going to have to make big headway there. So this is a massive month. And really, I think it's you can't even look to the end of March. You got to look through this series here. And by the time you get done playing The Stars on March 14th, right? You'll have two Stars, two Panthers, two Stars here at home at Nationwide. You're going to have to make some serious ground up, and make a little streak here, you know, where you're getting at least a point. You know, you're starting to get to the point where the worst case scenario for any of these games should be an overtime L. Mm-hmm. You can't afford to lose many more.
The goal in Dallas right now, yeah, I think would be 3 points in these two games for sure. And then you're looking at it. This is a time where, you know, they play the Panthers and they get the Stars again, like you said. So this is a time to stack some of those points. And then you get into the schedule where you're playing some of those teams ahead of you in the standings. And then you can start to eat away. So you got to build up your point base there. And then you're to the point where, okay, if you beat Carolina 3 out of 4 times, think of the point differential in stealing the points there, things like that. So that would be like a 4-2 differential, and it'd be a 6-2 differential, but you'd move up 4 points compared to them, and that's 4 games in a row. So then you could possibly move ahead of Carolina. So it's just about stringing these together, keep the good things going, and doing that. One thing that is still here for the Blue Jackets' identity, I think, when these guys are healthy, is that top defensive line. Here's Torts on how they've been playing.
I thought Z and Jonesy, as a tandem, played very well off of one another. It's a big step for them, and it's a big step for our team if they can get going, because they work off of one another so well, and that really helps us with our game, the tempo of our game, and everything about it. So it was one of the better games, not just Z playing really good, not just Jonesy playing really good, but both of them together working off one another. So that's very important for our team.
Also, nice to see those guys a little bit involved with the offense on Tuesday night as well. But just, yeah, when those two are healthy and they're on the ice, we know they can be one of the top defensive units in the NHL. But they need to put it together, and they need to, you know, make Corpy's job a little bit easier, because the Jackets have not been easy on their goalies the last 2 weeks.
No, they haven't. It's one thing if your forwards aren't playing good D. They are coming back as well to help you out. But if your top defensemen, your all-stars, two guys that are all-star caliber, aren't playing well, then that's where, you know, things can really go downhill quickly. Because it's in any sport. Like, if your stars aren't performing to their capability, it just naturally is a buzzkill for the rest of the roster. So with Seth and Z working together really well and playing well, you hope that starts to kind of basically spread like yeast throughout the rest of the crew. You know,
yeah, it's similar to the crowd stuff. When the top line is playing well, the rest of the team feels good, and they go
no
out
question,
and they have high energy.
Because when Torch says, you know, a couple of weeks ago that, hey, well, what did you think of your first line? Oh, they suck. Well, okay. Well,
what does that mean about me? I'm on the fourth
right,
line.
Exactly. So there's a trickle-down effect to all of it. And, there's been a ton of analysis yesterday about what the win against the Red Wings actually mean. I don't think they fixed everything. Nobody does. I think any logical, unless you're a diehard, just I'm going to ignore the truth here, I don't think anybody really thinks that everything was fixed.
It just gives you an idea of the things they can do that they need to try to do, that this is what can make this team successful. Circle
they avoided
these
disaster.
Things, work
That's
on
what
these.
It told me. Yeah. They avoided disaster of having to face an L to that team. And it gave them an opportunity to at least stay alive. Now you have to do it against better teams, and you at least gave yourself that opportunity. So you can't come back and make the playoff run unless you beat the Red Wings that night, and you can't continue to do it unless you beat the Stars tonight.
Yeah, you got to beat the teams that you can get points from, and then focus on at least getting to, you know, a wash with the other teams in the division.
Yeah.
Could we see a familiar face returning to coaching this offseason? Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
It's Bishop and Laurinaitis is What's Up?
What's up, man? So for you.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Honda dealers.
Small pivot here at the beginning of What's Up, but it's still Big Ten basketball. Reading this coming by from the Dispatch right now. The Big Ten is actually going to allow fans at the Big Ten tournament next week. It's in Lucas Oil Stadium, so bigger building. So it's going to be up to 8,000.
Wow.
So that's going to be big. I don't know what 8,000 people in Lucas Oil is going to sound like, you know, because it doesn't trap the sound the same way that a normal size arena would, but I think it's still going to be something, and it gives the players' families a chance to get out there and see them in a postseason tournament, even if it's just the conference tournament. So that's going to be something that if you're interested in, we're very close to Indianapolis, so if you're interested in as a Buckeye fan, you might be able to get into Lucas Oil Stadium. As it sits right now, Ohio State would be the number 5 seed, and they would play the second game Thursday.
I mean, I love it for the kids that they're going to have at least some people being able to watch them play during this. 8,000 is going to seem like a ton to them. Now, it won't look like it, you know, in Lucas Oil on the TV, but you'll feel it. You'll hear it. If you've been watching these games anyway throughout the season, that will definitely make some kind of difference to you, you know, when you're watching it. So
I wonder how spread out that'll be. Basketball, I hope it doesn't – you end up in, like, that third tier. Like
right.
All the way up there, but you still got to be spread out as much as you can. So I don't know how 8,000 is going to look. But.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think, you know, a lot of people are just doing a whole lot of trial and error and some stuff, you know. So,
I said yesterday, the good news is there's good news. That's where we're headed right now. That things are trying to open back up and trying to get people back in the stands. I did read that AAA baseball is probably going to be pushed back a month into more May because they're trying to keep those squads ready to just go right up. Like they're like quarantined so they can go right up to the majors if they need to call somebody up, and they think they'll be in a better spot to just have them be traveling as actual AAA teams in the, in May rather than April. So there's something, but we probably could get some baseball games here at Huntington Park. And, you know, DeWine said that they could be up to 30% capacity. So there's a chance you could go to a baseball game this year in Columbus.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, wouldn't we all love an opportunity to go down to Huntington and just to be outside on a beautiful day, see downtown? I think that'd be great. It'd be awesome to be able to have that back.
I live walking distance to Huntington.
Nice. I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I love that park. And
last summer was the first full summer I had in this apartment, and a multitude of things obviously were a bummer about last year and the summer, but I was looking forward to that. Like, oh, we could hit up random Huntington Park nights,
of course. Or,
you know, on a Saturday, just walk over there, get the lawn ticket, and just kind of hang out, and that was taken away. So hopefully a chance to get out there this year. Another person that could have a chance of coming back, Thad Matta, shows up in this article from ESPN. So this is their 2021 college basketball coaching hot seat guide. And this was a section about, you know, it was going over who's available already, what teams could be available, teams to keep an eye on, coaches from there that could move, and who could be jumping back in. Thad Matta, the second name on this list. He's just 53, but we know he's had the health problems with his back and how hard that is, you know, physically coaching. But here's what they had to say about him. Matta has been pursued by several schools since parting ways with Ohio State back in 2017, including by Penn State this year, but hasn't shown much interest. Should the right job open, though, my understanding is Matta would be interested in getting back into college coaching. Will that happen this spring? I was also reading that he's not on that that deal where he's required to interview to continue collecting a check from Ohio State. That's done. Those years of that is over. So if he shows interest, it is most likely genuine at this point. So, I mean, what do you think about Thad Matta coming back in? I think he's still got to have juice to do it. He's still got to have, you know, some gas in the tank. It's just whether or not he feels comfortable coming back from his physical standpoint.
Yeah, I was surprised that he's only 53. So he's younger than I had thought.
He's only 4 years older than Holtman.
Yeah, and you know, one of the schools that jumps out is Indiana. If they don't figure it out, you know, would he go back to the state of Indiana and take that job? I think Thad will coach again, because, you know, if there's some interest, it'll, like you said, there's no contractual obligation to keep interviewing to get that OSU check, which is a fascinating part of the contract. You have to at least make an attempt to get another job. Okay. I'm going to
make an attempt to offset the expense for us, but
I'm a Zoom interview poorly on purpose. Now I don't have to interview well, right? I can just, you know, say I interviewed.
And like, are you allowed to turn down the job? Like, can he?
Right. Yeah.
Can he be offered the job and be like, actually, it's not the right opportunity.
Dad, you made no attempt. They offered you $10 million a year and you said, well, I just didn't want the job. It wasn't a fit.
Make sure to send that, that permission slip that we interviewed back to Ohio State so they know, but no thank you on the job offer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it really is, it's, you know, you start getting into these coaches' contracts and it's pretty fascinating to see some of these exit, strategies and stuff like that. But I think Thad will, again, coaches never really get rid of that itch to do it, right? To be in that locker room.
We see it time and time again. Guys who go into ESPN careers we just saw it with Urban Meyer. It looked like things were going great on TV and he seemed to be enjoying it. And then the Jacksonville Jaguars come calling and he's ready to go.
You miss the process. You miss the purpose. You miss the locker room. You miss the cohesion, all that stuff. So I think that's, that's where, you know, it kind of all goes is, you know, what's your point for going about your daily life?
And we talk about this.
Some people really can go ahead and, can go and golf all day and, you know, do the Anthony Rothman, you know, where you're just always ready to hit the country club lifestyle. And some can't, you know, like there's no way that Urban Meyer was gonna be able to golf every single day, even if it was at Muirfield or Double Eagle and he got hooked up with the best courses every single day, as much as you wanted, that wasn't going to fulfill him.
Yeah. Some people don't want to wake up and just pour the cup of coffee and read the newspaper in the morning and just kind of chill. They want to get out there and get it done. And we talk about this a lot on this show. I think Thad Matta is a good candidate for the way college basketball is going as the one and done is phasing out. We might talk about this tomorrow, this league of 16 to 18 year olds that might forego college eligibility and just play in that, like an NBA developmental youth league. So that's another reason why college basketball is going to change. And Thad Matta, while he did have his fair share of one and dones and they were all, you know, really good players, the Greg Odens, the Mike Conleys, what's his name up in D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah.
Those kind of guys. He also had those career, you know, Ohio State guys, the Aaron Crafts, the Deshaun Thomas. I almost said Deshaun Jackson. I was like, no,
right.
That's not right.
It's okay. Sometimes they all blend together.
You know what hurts? You know what I've had really tough time with is CJ Jackson used to play point guard for Ohio State, and now CJ Walker plays point guard for Ohio State. That one's been tough. But
when I just keep it to one name. You know, so I'm like, oh yeah, no, CJ's playing great. Like if you've noticed, like I just say Kofi at Illinois. I don't even try to go for his last name.
That's a tough one. Everybody just agrees it's Coburn now, and that's apparently what we're saying. Even though
it's Coburn,
it's not how it's spelled.
But it's Coburn. But you could be rolling in the conversation, and Bo Bishop goes Cockburn, and you're like, well, damn, am I wrong? Right? It's like
the guys on the TV said it this way.
Exactly.
But
for
I
instance,
trust Bo.
the best example is where it doesn't really matter what the true spelling is. The whole Tyrod.
Yeah.
That whole deal was fascinating, and so is Greg Schiano. It's Greg Schiano. When you ask him, he says it's piano, so it's Greg Schiano. But for years, he's been called Greg Schiano, so that now when I call him Greg Schiano on air, but if Kirk Herbstreit calls him Schiano, I'm an idiot because I'm not saying it right. No, I'm saying it right, moron. Why don't you get everybody else right? But if you're only in the 10%, then you aren't. Only I guess I am wrong.
That reminds me, like being around like Iowa, everybody calls him Kirk Ferentz. But there's just this like group of people on TV who will always say Ferentz.
Yes.
And it has persisted for so, I mean, he's been the coach for 20 plus years. It has persisted for so long that it almost has gaslit me into being like, am I wrong? Is it Ferentz? Is it not Ferentz? And I think he's just too nice of a guy to point it out. And he's just whatever you want to call me. And that's the problem with people in their names is when they go to the whatever you want to call me. It's like, no, just tell me. I'll learn how it's pronounced. It's one of two ways. Just let me know.
There has to be a real way to pronounce your name. Just tell me what it is.
Yes.
We'll work towards making that the norm. That's it. It's not that difficult.
Speaking of a name that people might have some trouble with the first time they read it, Jim Boeheim continues to be a jerk during his press conferences. More on that next. Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
Introducing the new and improved Fan app. Listen to all your favorite shows and podcasts live or on demand. Download it now. Download it now. The Fan. The finest distillation of sports talk in all of Ohio. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis, sponsored by Window Nation. Searching for replacement windows online? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. One more thing on the name talk. I think I want to clarify this one point. If you're somebody who has your name missaid a lot, which I'm sure that's something you've grown up with, James, if you don't like care that much, that's good. That's fine to be like, oh, it doesn't really matter. But if somebody the point is, if somebody asks you straight up how to pronounce your name, give them an answer. Just say the way you say it and let that roll.
It's Laurinaitis. That's how you say my last name. And yet one of my closest friends from playing, Chris Long, still calls me Laurinaitis. And I just don't correct him anymore because I've told him 3 or 4 times. And you get to a point where it's like, all right, well, obviously they're just not listening, or they don't care, or they forget. So I can see how this happens, right? Because Herbstreit called me, I think, Laurinaitis, that whole game against Texas, he went back and forth because I just think, for whatever reason, the pronunciation guide, it's obvious. It was L-O-R-E in capital letters, lore, Nitis. But it's okay. It's fine.
The worst is, do you ever get pronunciation guides where you're like, I don't know what this means either? Like
yes. Yes.
what does an upside down E mean? I don't know.
So Minnesota and a lot of other schools, but Minnesota, there's a couple names. Winston de la Tabadere was one. And when you look at it, it's like L-A-T-T-O-E-B. As it's not, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting confused. and then Asezi Otemewa was another one, and DN number 9. And anyway, they had them actually say their name on the website. So you could click the audio, and it's them saying their name, which obviously helps 10 times more.
Good. Yeah, and then it's right from the player's mouth, and you can just say, that's how he said it. Like,
yeah, that's how he said it. So don't get mad at me. That's how he said it.
Yeah. The worst is, what you were describing with Herbstreit. I've done that before where you're going back and forth, and you even if you know the correct one, sometimes when you're just talking fast, especially on the air, you'll say it wrong, and then there's nothing you can do about it. But just do your best to say people's names the right way. And people who have names that are hard to say, if somebody asks you, tell them how to say it.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like I said, names, Jim Boeheim, he just continues to be grumpy old man of basketball. Every few weeks, something of his comes up, and this one I thought was just going way too far. So he was asked a pretty normal question about defensive development of two of his players, and Boeheim answers it, and even as like the SID is like going to the next person on the Zoom, like directing it, he chimes back in and he adds, quote, "But if I had played Jesse Edwards and Kadari Richmond, we'd probably be 22-2 now. I just didn't see that. I couldn't figure that out by myself after 45 years. I needed a reporter to figure that out who's never played basketball and is 5'2". So he's possibly referring to this tweet from the reporter who asked the question is The Athletic's Matthew Gutierrez. And he said on March 1st, if Richmond and Edwards had played the minutes that they deserve, Syracuse is probably somewhere around 17-5 overall this season and in the big dance. What a difference they provide. I guess it sort of calls out playing time, but it's not like an indictment on Boeheim. It's a pretty normal beat reporter comment. He was just basically saying these two guys who don't get too many minutes – play pretty well. But okay, yeah, maybe you take offense with it, but this is just going way too far. like Jim Boeheim, you're like a legendary coach.
No,
like,
I love the petty chops. I love the pettiness here. I'll put it this way. I think it's an unfair assumption, and we all do it. I'm guilty of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Of when we say, well, if these two would have played, I mean, gosh, they're, you know, it'd be like us being like, well, if Trey Sermon played against Bama, we win. Well, no, you're not sure. Right? Like, maybe it's a little better balanced offense, but there's a whole lot of what ifs in sports that we do all the time.
The famous one with Ohio State was Dwayne Haskins' sophomore year versus keeping JT Barrett in. And there's a whole lot of stuff, right? Their chest all day about, it should have been Dwayne Haskins in because of what he did a year later, which we've seen quarterbacks develop in college.
Yes.
They don't always play the same way their sophomore and junior year.
Yep. And you see how, and I'm sure if people that said
that. But can
you
imagine Urban Meyer or Ryan Day sitting up there and saying to a reporter like,
no.
Oh, you've never played football and you're only 5'2". What do you know?
No. No, they were a lot more subtle about it. My favorites was always how we kept asking, why don't you just get under center for a QB sneak on 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1, Urban? And he kept saying, we don't practice it. We don't practice getting under center when every time they went to do a kneel down, they would be under center for the kneel down. You know, so it's like it'd be a little more subtle. It's just grumpy old man. He tends to do it. Why am I forgetting his name in San Antonio? He does it.
Popovich.
And so it's just, look, these guys are facing the media day in and day out. I'm not going to crush him for it. Should he know better? Of course. But
the simplest one could also be to
just
check Twitter.
Mood. Right.
Like, how did this tweet even come across to him that he has this grudge
who
with
knows?
Matthew Gutierrez?
I don't know. But all I know is that, like, you catch anybody on a bad day, and that's, you know, any of this stuff can happen, right?
Did you ever have a teammate that or a coach or somebody that you played with, worked with, that just had an unreasonable grudge against a media person that they would not let go?
Oh, of course. Yeah, all the time. I play with guys, I won't name their names, that would specifically not talk to somebody. And if they came over to do something like or interview you in like a group setting, they would, like, even if that person asked the question to them, they'd either say next question or they would answer it but not look at the person. They would just kind of look away as like they were getting the upper hand.
Yeah.
I don't, It always amused me. Look, there's a lot of guys too that you just don't agree with. Sometime you come along their quotes. I'll never forget. There's a guy in St. Louis, Bernie Miklas, who is a very well-known reporter there. Does a lot of great stuff with Cardinals baseball. And I'll never forget. I still have his article how he said it was a huge mistake to draft me instead of Ray Maluga. But the first time I met Bernie, I wasn't sitting there being like, no, I'm not talking to you because you wanted Ray. Why don't you go to Cincinnati? You know, I was just, okay.
Yeah, tall are you?
I just thought these guys have a job to do. They're creating content and treat them like human beings. It's not that difficult. Doesn't mean I was always in a really good mood. There'd be some days where I'd just be shorter. There'd be some days where I'd be more friendly, just depending on
And all that. But if Boeheim stopped after the, I just didn't see that. I couldn't figure that out by myself after 45 years. Okay. That's the pettiness. That's sort of like defending yourself. Like, hey, I'm the expert. I'm the coach. I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm doing with my lineups. But then to go to the, I needed the reporter to figure that out, who's never played basketball and is 5'2". That kind of gatekeeping to media and stuff that you can never play, just because you've never played a sport doesn't mean you can understand it, is a ridiculous notion.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess when you're 68, you should have a better idea on how to, well, for one, I don't even know why you're, usually coaches that are that long in the tooth, you know, after 45 years of coaching, they have somebody running their Twitter for them. And if you're that person, are you really going up to company? That's ballsy if you're that guy running Coach Boeheim's Twitter. Hey, man, Coach, you see this Matthew Gutierrez? He said, all right, you know, like.
Maybe it's the opposite for Boeheim. He has somebody running it, but they run it. He has them running it to the point where if anybody mentions anything about my coaching decisions, bring me that tweet.
Yeah.
So I can write it down.
I always find
my
it funny
book.
When, like, coaches, I'll see it out of Coach Fick all the time, where it's like happy birthday to anybody on their roster, and it's like a nice little wallpaper drawn up, and it's like the other day it was his son Landon's birthday. I was like, happy birthday, Landon. And I'm like, like, all right, you know, that's some intern running his Twitter that is, you know, like, coach, well,
he's
going to
get
birthday,
home from
son.
He's going to get home from the facility that day, and his son's going to be like, you didn't wish me happy birthday on Twitter, Dad. Do you care? Yeah. All right. Mel Kiper offered his latest analysis on two Buckeye prospects who saw their draft stock drop this season. That coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Plus, we're going to talk to Austin Ward a little bit about OSU spring ball. Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Good morning, I'm Mark the Shark. A couple of NHL Central Division teams who have been struggling lately meet tonight in Dallas. The Blue Jackets have just 2 wins in their last 9 games. The Stars have just 1 victory in their last 10. Face off this evening, 8:30 here on The Fan. In basketball, during this final 4 days of the Big Ten's regular season, there are a couple of important matchups tonight. Second-ranked Michigan hosts Michigan State. With the win, the Wolverines move a half game ahead of Illinois for the conference lead, and Nebraska visits fifth-ranked Iowa. By the way, the Big Ten announced this morning that it will allow a limited number of fans to attend the conference tournament next week at Lucas Oil Stadium. A total of 8,000 fans will be allowed at each game. In golf, Jason Kokrak has the early lead in round one of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. The Sports Center sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Earn a $200 cash bonus when you get a home equity line of credit from BMI. Visit BMIFCU.org for details and apply today.
The best in the Midwest. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan. Chops in for Bo, hanging out with James today. The draft is coming, and there's going to be a lot of Buckeyes in it, but I think it's going to be a little shorter on first-rounders this year than we've gotten used to under the Urban Meyer and first year of Ryan Day teams at Ohio State. And there's nothing wrong with that. Not every, you know, you're not always going to be loaded with all these first rounders, but there are two guys that stand out there, and we saw them this year that they were just going to opt out, especially if it was going to spring ball. They were going to opt out and just go to the draft, and it stinks for them because it seems like both of their draft stocks dropped throughout the season, and that's tough for those guys to come back. And they fought out there with their guys, and they obviously the team was really good. For me, Sean Wade, like, I see it. I understand why his stock dropped a little bit. They wanted him to go outside, see if he could play the number one cornerback, and he didn't quite live up to what they saw him do in the slot. So that one makes sense. And the Wyatt Davis one, I don't quite get. I don't know what he did wrong this year that could cause him to his draft stock to drop. But here we are. So Mel Kiper was talking about both these guys on an ESPN teleconference yesterday. And here's what he had to say about Sean Wade. In terms of Wade, Wade just didn't have the cover skills this year playing outside that he did when he was in the slot. I think he could end up being an inside safety type or a slot corner when he felt more comfortable rather than being out on an island. So he's going to be an interesting guy. I think he should have been a first round pick had he played up to the level you expected, or certainly as he did in 2019 when he was playing in the slot. So to me, he's a second or third round pick now. So, yeah, I think he would have been a first round pick if he played like a first round pick. I hear that, Mel. But I mean, it stinks for Sean Wade, but like I said, for me, as you watched him play throughout the season, the things added up and the writing became clear on the wall that he probably isn't a number one corner in the NFL.
No, he's not. I don't think he's a lockdown guy, but doesn't mean he can't have a really nice career at DB mm-hmm. in the league. And
nothing wrong with being picked in the second or third round.
No, we've been spoiled with the guys that we've had come through here, with Conley and with all the way back to Eli Apple, right?
And Okuda last year.
Yes, Okuda and Arnett even. And, you know, look, you have a bunch of guys, I don't know, missing Denzel Ward and Lattimore and guys. I won't leave one out. But, you know, as you have this line of dudes that have come through, we're used to the true number ones and then guys that have turned into Pro Bowlers and some better than others in the league. But it's the launching off point to the league. And so in defense of Sean Wade, he did not have a spring ball to really learn all the techniques of outside, mm-hmm. which is difficult to adjust that way. And to be honest, he got beat multiple times. Some stuff was frustrating where it would be like a slant and he could beat and he'd be 4 yards off, where he'd be caught peeking. And I think he'll move into the slot again and he'll
probably play. Well, then it was frustrating because some of the times were just like pretty good coverage and just a guy the wide receiver making a great play.
He struggled immensely with high point in the ball. You know, you felt like, whether it was Penn State, whether it was Indiana, even when Rutgers scored late in that game and it was the backup tight end, Giovanni Haskins, went up and caught the ball over him, right? Mm-hmm. It was just, whenever the ball was up in the air there, he struggled and he felt more comfortable in the slot, blitzing, all that stuff, working in there. And some guys are more comfortable in there. Some guys hate being in the slot, but he seemed to like it more. And then that means, okay, now does he have the physicality, if you want to put him at safety? If you want to put him at safety and have him come down in the box and play that way and also have the traits to be able to cover as well, that's a lot of scheme versatility there if he can hold up. Now, he is not the biggest guy in the world, right? So you wonder about when you label him as a safety, I'm like, I don't know. I think you label him as a number three corner on your roster, with the potential to grow through practicing and all that. But he's more rough around the edges, if you will, to start out than some of the corners that have come through here in the past.
I think the glass half full for him, though, is that he came back and this happened. And so he wasn't drafted in the first round with the idea and expectations that he was going to be a lockdown corner on the outside, that they could move him out there and do that thing. Yeah, the scouts did want to see that from him, but his draft stock was higher before he played this season than it is now. So if he had been drafted and not played in 2020 at all, I think there would be these added expectations to him that he couldn't meet him this year on the outside at Ohio State. And so you go into the NFL and that can totally derail a guy's career. Now, like I said, you know, the optimistic view for me is to say that he's going to be drafted with the intention that he's going to play slot, maybe safety, and the team's going to know that. So that's going to be their expectation. The fan base should know that. So that should be their expectation. And it puts him in a position where he can succeed instead of being drafted into a position that he might not be able to play, especially at the next level.
Yeah, and look, I think when you're an NFL team evaluating Sean now, you have to have that idea of where are we going to play him? Because if you think you're going to play him on the outside, then you can draft him in the early second, right? Because that's what it would dictate. But if you're thinking we're just going to play this guy as our third option, although I will say now more than ever, the league's base defense is a 4-2-5 where there are three DBs in the field. So this is the perfect timing for that to warrant, like, hey, we're going to draft a guy in the second round that we think is our third corner. Back in my play, it would have been like, no, come on. The guy's going to see the field maybe half the time. Now it's like, no, that guy's going to see the field most of the time, right? Yeah. you need about 5 or 6 DBs almost to rotate in like you do wide receivers. And that's what Kerry Combs started to do last time he was here at Ohio State, if you remember, that he would always rotate in the young DBs and rotate these guys through, mm-hmm. and they'd have great experience. So it is fascinating to see kind of what he will become. He has a lot of the traits you love, but there's a lot of technique work to be done with Sean.
Moving on, here's what Mel Kiper had to say about offensive guard Wyatt Davis, who was Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year, or at least guarded. He won one of those awards that has two names in it for the Big Ten. Wyatt Davis, I think, is in that second, third round discussion as well. Solid player all the way around. Guards are going to get pushed down automatically unless they're super elite like a Quentin Nelson was when he came out of Notre Dame and went in the top 10. But I think Wyatt Davis, second round, at worst third, and he adds in again. I think Sean Wade, probably second, at worst third for him. So there you have it. Wyatt Davis, he wasn't as clear cut, maybe a first rounder, and position can dictate that. Like you were saying with a slot corner, you might not even draft in the second round, even if you think he's going to be perfect at the position. But that's something that you can look at for Sean Wade. And then Wyatt Davis, for him, if he was getting some first round grades, I don't see why he would have fallen. Did you see anything he put on film this year that would have knocked him?
No, I didn't. I also haven't studied to the point to where I'm watching him every single snap. Mm-hmm. There were some plays where there's some interior rushes that you don't know whether it was him or Miller or who's responsible, but there still is nothing to where you're like, oh, I should be hugely concerned. But I do agree with Mel. Unless you were an absolute dude, when you watch Nelson play at Indy now, you understand what he means by that. Like,
just a mauler.
Very rarely are you going to see guards on highlight films where you would enjoy watching it. But I love watching the clips of Nelson, like, kicking back. There's nobody rushing his way. And then he just peels off, like, opens up and goes and knocks out a blitzer. That's the stuff that doesn't happen, you know, in football. And he's doing things that you never see on tape. So there's a difference between that guy and justifying an interior offensive lineman versus just, another guard. However, here's what I'll disagree with Mel. I think now more than ever, teams are starting to appreciate guards more and more.
Well, and it's the Aaron Donald effect, yes, probably.
Yes, because more teams are realizing if you can get a real guy on the inside, and even, I mean, just Aaron Donald, of course that's the big reason, but even guys like J.J. Watt or guys like the Browns don't ever want to get to a point where we used to do this with some of our guys, where we knock Chris Long down inside, because usually your guards are not as good as pass blockers as, you know, the tackles. So what you try to do is then when you put your skill inside, like a DN inside, you try to find ways to add blitzes to where you don't let the tackles then come down and help the guard. You try to kind of space it out by the way the rush pattern goes to where your best pass rusher is on one of their worst pass blockers, and then you got to win one-on-one. And you hope they can do it before the quarterback finds an open receiver. So that's part of the cat and mouse game of football when it comes to that. Now, I think Wyatt is a guy that I think will be he's an obvious second rounder to me. He's one of the top guards, if not the top guard. And is there anything massively sexy about that position? No, but he won't surprise me if he's an 8 to 10 year vet.
Yeah, but you're right about guards being more important.
I think they're more important now than they've ever been.
Yeah, and they're getting the money now, too. You see these contracts that some of these guards are signing, and it's much different than what you used to expect. They're starting to get tackle-type money. Not quite to left tackle, but, I mean, they're up there as, you know, high. Really, it's to the point where it's a headline now when a guard signs a big deal, and that's something I don't think we've seen before. When I think about that change in the defensive interior line, I always think about those two guys on Minnesota in, like, the mid 2000s. Were they both Williams?
Pat Williams and Kevin Williams.
Those two. I mean, they were good players, but they were just huge guys in the middle that, like, weren't giving you much from the pass.
Kevin was like 6'5", 320, and then Pat was like 6'4", 340. And you weren't moving them. But the best part is they let E.J. Henderson run free there at Mike linebacker, which E.J. was a dude until he broke his femur, which I cannot imagine the pain. Can you imagine the pain of breaking your femur?
I knew somebody in high school who broke his femur, and I remember when I broke my elbow playing my sophomore year.
The amount of force.
I asked him, I was like, after my surgery, I was like, oh, it's still swollen. This was probably, when I was starting to go into rehab and stuff. I'm like, when does the swelling go down? And he's like, my leg is still swollen. And this was like a year and a half after he broke his femur.
So, bro, it is, yeah. I cannot imagine just the force to break that thick of a bone that it would take. I remember the play still. I remember I was watching it live. I remember the play. He was running, kind of chasing someone down from behind, and then a safety, I believe, came up, and it was just his leg got caught, and it was a knife right there. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, but EJ was one of my favorite players growing up. Played at Maryland.
All right. Well, there you have it. Another note on the draft for the Buckeyes. We talked about that. They have the 14 combine invitees, if the combine were actually happening. And that does lead the nation this year. Alabama, Georgia, and Notre Dame were second with 11. So another mark in the win category for the Buckeyes. And that's where we got the information originally, was just a tweet from them. But it's more for the graphic department to work with. Coming up, GM saying things about their quarterback situations and what they might mean. Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
Bishop and Laurinaitis is presented by Window Nation. Searching for a replacement window? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Day drinking responsibly with a touch of class. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Join The Fan, 10TV, and the Ohio Education Association as we honor classroom heroes. In these weird times, teachers and educators need our support and recognition more than ever. Nominate your classroom hero at 971thefan.com/heroes. James, you know what one of the few drawbacks of when the weather starts to change in the spring, and maybe you and in your crazy smart house on your estate have a better thermostat than I do. But the problem is it gets warm in the day and then it doesn't get quite cold enough. And then this time in the morning, now we're working from home, the heat isn't kicking on because it's not getting cold enough for it to kick on. But that means heat hasn't ran in 12 hours or, 15 hours, whatever it might be. And it runs only once a day. So you don't get that continuous warm air. So it's hot cold in my house right now. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So there's two options you could do. You could turn the fan on to get constant airflow through your house. So at least there's constant air circulation.
Turn on the reverse one, the one that's for, do you want the cold weather one or the warm weather one? Because, the fan goes two ways.
It does. Okay. The fan's just blowing the air that is in your house through your house. It's sucking the air through that's in your house, and it's just blowing.
Oh, you mean
back out.
Like the fan of the thermostat?
Yes.
Yes. I thought you meant a ceiling fan.
No. So that's what you can do.
Okay.
If you want to get constant air circulation, I don't know if that means it'll be warmer or colder. I tend to do it because the room I'm in right now, so my mother-in-law's in town, so I've been kind of I got kicked out of the guest room that I was usually doing it in. I moved this small little desk unit into the nursery because the baby's not in the nursery yet. She's in our room still.
Okay.
So, but this is the one bedroom that's above our garage, and it is a couple degrees colder than the rest of the house. And so I turned the fan on to try to get at least some of the other warmer air elsewhere into here.
All right.
Now, does it work? I don't know. I also have a Nest thermostat. So I do have a smart thermostat that we have the hot, cold setting on. But you're right. When it's right in the middle sometimes, because of this changing weather, it doesn't kick on either.
Exactly. So I'm sitting here. I'm like, I don't really want to put on a sweatshirt, but I feel kind of cold. But I'm not, it's a weird feeling. I'm not cold, but I feel cold. I don't know how to explain it.
I get it. It's a real battle. It is. My feet are cold, and you're right. I have jeans on and a long sleeve shirt. I'm like, well, why my feet are freezing? So I want to put on my UGG slippers because I'm cold in here.
I don't know what to do. So I'll put on a sweatshirt after the show. Here we go. Speaking of being hot and cold, here are some quotes from some coaches and some GMs on some quarterbacks that we're interested in and what's going to happen with these teams. First up, Bears head coach Matt Nagy on what they're looking for in a quarterback. Quote, leadership, decision making, and if you have some versatility as a quarterback with your legs, great. If you don't, no problem. We can work around it. Now, they still have Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky. There's been some rumors that Alex Smith could join them because Matt Nagy was his OC, or quarterback's coach, then his OC for some time in Kansas City. So I don't know if this is saying that he's looking for the quarterbacks they have to do this, or if these are quarterbacks that they could bring in that he would want to have these qualities.
I'll put it this way. If you're Matt Nagy, you better go out and get I'd throw in the house.
You need to be Russell thinking Wilson. Stronger because you're going to get fired if you turn in the season with
throwing
these guys.
Deshaun Watson because you don't have time to wait. You don't have time to develop. You're not giving – I mean, you will be out of a job and out of work if you don't get one of those guys to help solve a lot of your problems at that position. Now, can it be done? I don't know. It takes two to tango in a trade, but I'm trying to offer anything possible to get the future of my franchise, especially if it's Deshaun Watson up mm-hmm. there. But, again, yeah, I mean, I don't think Deshaun would allow it.
This is such an empty quote, though, talking about quarterbacks, leadership, decision-making, and if you have some versatility as a quarterback with your legs, great.
But it doesn't really matter.
If you don't, no problem. I mean, we can work around it. I don't know. Just and that's basically what they're doing at quarterback. We'll just throw one of the guys we have out there and see how it goes. We made the playoffs last year, so that was good.
So pointless. It's the most pointless quote. But it's if I could drop a quote that Matt Nagy would use, it'd be something like that. Like, what did I actually learn from reading that? Nothing.
Yeah, it's all right, Coach Nagy. So that's what's going on with the Bears. Here's some a trio from GMs. Jets GM Joe Douglas says he will field calls on Sam Darnold. So he's not saying he's fully out on the block, but he's saying if you call us and offer us something, we'll listen. Raiders GM Mike Mayock on Derek Carr, quote, I think he's one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, and we couldn't be happier with him. And Vikings GM Rick Spielman says Kirk Cousins is our quarterback. Both Mayock and Spielman kind of had the he's our quarterback for now stances, which is, I guess, something. But it's kind of what the Rams said about Jared Goff before they traded him for Matt Stafford. So I at least Joe Douglas is the closest to telling the truth. I think they're full on in on trading Darnold. I think they're beyond fielding calls. I don't. Maybe they're not fully soliciting calls, but they're taking calls that are coming in very seriously.
Yeah, I think they're trying to gauge what's the best play there for their franchise, and you have to have an option if you're them of who you're taking then at number two or what you're going to do there. So that's a big issue for the Jets. You know, they're trying to weigh trades, free agents.
Well, and for them, it's like if they keep Darnold, then do we trade two? Do we trade Darnold and draft a quarterback at two? Do we keep Darnold, trade two, try to turn that into a few
more picks? And the Jets were rumored to be on Deshaun Watson's list of okay teams, right? I mean, so you're wondering, do we trade two as part of that deal, or do we stay at two and take Zach Wilson or Justin Fields? Do we keep Sam Darnold and take best player available at two, or trade back and get multiple first-round picks for the second pick in the draft? There's so many different scenarios you have to weigh in what's the smartest move that can help you win and start to build towards a winning organization, but also be the best thing long-term for you. So there's so many options for the Jets that, everything's on the table if you're them. I think the Vikings, I mean, you're still in a total guaranteed contract with Kirk Cousins, so you're not going to cut him.
But the no-trade clause is gone. I read that.
Yeah.
So that's the only – that kind of gives them a little more room.
And
but
this is what's fascinating about the NFL is that as you look around, Chops, like there are so many quarterbacks that are technically available or being shopped. Like there's not
and
enough
they're not
positions
being
open.
Immediately taken.
There's not enough positions open.
It seems so like starting quarterbacks weren't tradable five years ago or something, and now they're every year.
Who's going to trade for Kirk Cousins? Like nobody wants Kirk Cousins, but the Vikings. It seems like
not a $30 million guaranteed or whatever it is.
So so you're in a position now. And Mike Mayock tried the whole, I laugh at that quote. We couldn't be happier with
that. That's the biggest lie of all of these quotes we're going over.
Yeah. Mayock he tried to garner up a market for Mariota and Carr, this offseason and got nothing. So then you're trying to do a little damage repair and be like, oh no, we love him. We think he's one of the best in the league.
Did you see the David Carr thing where he wrote an article for NFL.com that was like, if you're one of those teams on Russell Wilson's list, you pick up the phone right now. And one of those teams on the list is the Raiders. So I don't think that went over too well with his little brother.
Oh, it's amazing. Oh, I love it. Gosh, I love it.
Bro, what are you doing, man? What? No, I didn't. I forgot. I forgot that you were in Las Vegas.
So then I don't know if this is for sure because I didn't see like screenshots, but the article that I was reading said that it looks like they changed it, but without like really making they'll put little, this article has been changed at this time after, you know, it originally said this. They didn't put one of those in there, one of those clarifications, but it changed to if you are a quarterback needy team and you're on this list, you pick up the phone
right now. Yeah, that was nice. That's a smooth little.
Well, and the Raiders aren't needy because they think they've got one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. They couldn't be happier with missing the playoffs.
Derek Carr.
And
yeah.
playing Derek Carr.
I would love to put these GMs up to like a lie detector test, you know, and just fully to tell the, like one of those shows to tell the truth. Like, let's go put them up there and let's get our true feelings out on these guys. These guys, and it's part
imagine,
of the job description.
Imagine
so
the money the NFL could make on a candid camera GM coach show.
Oh man.
Show, where they
oh,
just,
gosh.
They bring them in and they.
A truly, well, this would be a problem because you talk about cancel culture. If you had, a truly unfiltered, behind the scenes, like even more, I was going to try to say like Hard Knocks, but that's not even truly unfiltered.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like making
fly
it
on
pay-per-view.
The
like if it was pay-per-view to say you're going to see every single, nothing will be edited. It is true. Like what was that show? Big Brother, whatever it was. Anyway, it's true. Everything's filmed of the entire draft process. You can see every big board conversation, every staff meeting. For one, what could you sell that for?
Mm-hmm.
And two, I'm not sure any staff would survive.
Yeah. And the NFL could encrypt it and it can't be copied. And so nobody can, you have to pay for the footage. It's the only way to get it.
That's it. Yeah. That'd be fascinating to see what they really think of the roster.
I mean, the NFL.
I know they used to just bash me. It's fine. Like, how do we get a faster, more athletic dude in the middle? I mean, it's part of the deal. Your whole deal. That's why the most true words ever spoken to me was Greg Williams. Every day is an interview. I'm interviewing. You're interviewing. Everyone is trying to get replaced. Every GM, every single day, looks at his roster at every position. And
who can
very rarely
get the same production? Or
very rarely,
production.
Yes. But very rarely did they say, "Yeah, we got a guy here." Like how many guys? Like how many GMs around the league are sitting back right now, truly relaxed? Like Light down in Jason Light down in Tampa Bay is probably relaxed for one more year, saying, "Yeah, man, Tom's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
We got Tom." But in the back of his mind, he's thinking already. What am I going to do when Tom does fall off the cliff? Like it's already in his head. Like
who is their backup even? I don't even know.
It was Blaine Gabbert.
Okay.
Blaine Gabbert.
He's still around somehow.
Blaine Gabbert has a Super Bowl ring. That's all you got to know.
All right. Austin Ward joins us next to talk all things Buckeyes as spring football approaches. Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
It's First Friday Somewhere.
That's a big sense of freedom.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis, chops in for Bo. James here as well. We're going to head out to the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline, joined by friend of the program, Austin Ward, football reporter for Ohio State for Letterman Row. So we know spring practice, when it's going to start. We've got that information out there. It was already circled in pencil, but now it's official. So that's good to know, and we're going with that. Quarterback is the obvious thing everybody's going to point to and look at. It's what all the eyeballs are going to be on this year. But I want to ask you, what's another position battle or, you know, new guys coming in that you're really keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I mean, as the quarterback position goes, if you're going to win a national title, that's where everything has to start, man. But, as James can attest, if you're going to build a solid defense, it's going to have to happen with those linebackers. And with four of them gone, that entire starting lineup plus one with Justin Hilliard, I mean, that's a big deal. Now, Ohio State's in a pretty good, rare sort of advantageous situation with a bunch of veterans who decided to stick it out and wait their turn. So it's not necessarily that Taraji Mitchell or Dallas Gant or Kayvon Pope or some other guys have – heated competition, but they're going to have to go earn it because there's some other guys that, Mitchell Melton or Cody Simon that have really turned some heads as they've been in the program. And now Washington's going to have to get that right. So you look at this transition a little bit after years of relying on Pete Warner, Tuff Borland, Baron Browning, getting 3 years of starting out of some of those guys. That's a new era that's happening there. So that starts March 19th, and that'll be key.
Yeah, Austin, it's funny because as you think about, this spring and how, for one, just getting a spring in is so crucial for this team. Just the idea of the quarterback position, but it's deeper than that, right? That's almost like the lazy analyst answer. It's the obvious one. Like, who's going to be key? You're replacing Justin Fields, who I think is the best quarterback at Ohio State since the 2000s. But I want to know... Yeah. For me, it's almost like the running back position is more intriguing to me because you got the 5-star kid in Henderson coming in. You got Master Teague who's there. You got Mayan Williams who has, he got my attention as a 3-star. He's kind of the forgotten about tough nose runner. And you almost get the sense that this offense under Coach Day is at its best when it's truly pounding the rock and threatening you. Could I make the argument that maybe the interior O-line ground game is almost more important than the quarterback? I've almost gotten, I guess, I've taken it for granted that we have Ryan Day developing QBs, but right, like when J.K. Dobbins was rolling, that's when that offense was going because of J.K.'s ability to run on the ground. When we finally got Trey Sermon rolling, that's when that offense really opened up. I feel like the tailback, and it's not just tailback, but the ground game in general is almost a bigger story on offense.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said there, James. And I think that, I mean, for me, I just sort of, C.J. Stroud had the lead. You know, he was the backup last year, and I know that they're going to start over and all that. But I just sort of anticipate that he'll probably be the guy. So I haven't spent a ton of time on that. But the running back competition is a lot more open and probably a lot more competitive even than what might happen at quarterback because of the names you mentioned. And that's without, you know, factoring in Evan Pryor, who, if he was in any other recruiting class in the country, would be the marquee guy that you'd be talking about as an impact freshman. You know, Mayan Williams, I thought his impact when he didn't get to play in the title, he was really coming on for a freshman and exceeding what I kind of expected for him. Marcus Crowley, you know, the year before he was having that freshman emergence before the knee injury against Maryland, and that thing really knocked him out for about, you know, 14 months. But, you know, Tony Alford still thought enough of him to put him on the field in the national championship game without having played a game in that span. So that tells you how highly they think of him. So, you know, Master Teague, you know, I think he's got 14 touchdowns in his career, but I sort of think that Ohio State has seen the ceiling for him, and they've got these other guys who might be able to elevate it and get to where you're talking about, take the torch from J.K., Trey Sermon. You know how high the bar is for Ohio State at running back. And, you know, I maybe I'll be wrong about Master Teague, but I think that that competition is going to be more interesting to watch as it plays out just because they have so many guys that can do it. And again, it's also like quarterback. There's only one football. So are you going to rotate? Are you going to do a committee approach? Does one emerge to be the guy? Because I also personally think Ohio State is best when they find one and stick with him. We'll see exactly how that plays out. It'll probably go all the way up until August in the opener before Tony Alford decides there.
Talking to Austin Ward of Letterman Row on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. We were mentioning this, that Ohio State leads the country with would-be combine invites at 14. So my question to you is, who is the guy that stands out as losing the most by not actually going to the hands-on combine and being in front of those coaches? Is it a guy like we were talking about Wyatt Davis and Sean Wade, who maybe saw their draft stock dropped a little bit? Is it Justin Fields, or is he going to be able to prove enough at the pro day that's similar to the combine? Who do you think loses the most of those 14 guys not being able to go to Indy?
Yeah, those are both good options. I think Justin Fields, I think the pro day for quarterbacks tends to be the one that gets more scrutiny. I think he'll be okay. Sean Wade, I think, needs to show, you know, test well and or needed to test well and show that, you know, he was fully healthy. He talked about having some nagging injuries that he was dealing with last year. But, you know, the guy that I thought could make the absolute biggest jump, and he did have the benefit of that Senior Bowl, was Baron Browning. We talked about the linebackers. You know, I think NFL teams are going to look at him the same way Ohio State did, with he could play three or four different positions. I think his testing numbers would have been off the charts. You know, he carries himself well in interviews. I think he would have aced all of that stuff. You know, I think he's a guy that the closer it got, the more time the NFL teams spent around him thinking of what they could maybe do with him, the more he would have climbed up those draft boards. And I still think he's going to be in pretty good shape either way. But maybe I'm just in a linebacker mood because James is on here. But him and Pete Warner, I think, you know, could have really blown people away with the combine and the numbers they could have posted. They've also been really productive in their college careers and have a ton of tape. But I don't know. I'm in that silver bullet mindset today. I think those guys would have probably benefited the most.
Austin, last one for me, and it has to go to that linebacker position because you're right. It's not every day that a whole core gets to go to a combine or invited, but a core plus one. It reminds me back of actually when USC had Clay Matthews, Maluga, Cushing, and then what was the fourth guy? Like Maova, something. Anyway, there was four guys. He actually went to the Browns. But it's a crew that we've they've been around forever, and a lot of Buckeye fans were pulling their hair out. I remember when Al Washington came over, like, finally, we're going to get some linebackers in here. Well, it stayed the same crew, right? And so is that – I guess my question will be then, should we expect it to be Taraja Mitchell starting? Should we expect it to be Dallas Gant? Should we expect it to be Kayvon Pope? Or is there a chance that maybe those guys get beat out? Because if there's a lot of thought of like, man, and this isn't a knock on Tough for any of those guys that they couldn't crack the lineup, but it's kind of a weird little balance here, right? Just because they're quote unquote next doesn't mean that they're going to be the ones to start. There could be a young gun. So I guess who's the one name? If I had to say, Austin, give me one name that's going to be a lock to start, one of the three, who is it?
The one that I was most interested to see this spring, James, was Tommy Eichenberg. I think he's sometimes, you know, you look to the true freshmen, and there's a lot of excitement about classes that come in. It's not likely that those guys are, especially in a program, you don't want them to come in and help right away. That means that you haven't been developing the guys ahead of them or recruiting well. So, you know, he's a year or two removed from all that process and the hype for himself. You know, he's a bit of that prototype that you put in there on the inside and is going to put some people in the ground and not afraid of contact. And sometimes you can read too much into these, you know, social media clues, but, you know, really right now, that's about all we have when you know, practices are probably aren't going to be as open as normal this spring. And so you're looking for these signs and talking to people. And it seems like, you know, Tommy Eichenberg, his name comes up a lot. They posted, you know, a picture of him leading in the weight room, which is, you know, not something they let just anybody do to talk to the teammates, as you know. So, again, that may be a stretch, but that's one reason why in March and April I was curious to see, you know, maybe what he looked like, if he could be an answer to get them going on the inside. I mean, he's athletic. He can move. He was recruited for a reason. You know, I would look at him. But the other two names I mentioned, James, I don't want to cover just everybody, but Cody Simon and Mitchell Melton, those dudes can play. They're going to have 6-7 linebackers that can rotate again. And now Washington, I think that's one reason why we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that having him back is so important because he knows this personnel, recruited them now for a couple years, and having him around is a big deal.
He's Austin Ward. You can hear him quite often here on Bishop and Laurinaitis, but you can find his real stuff on Letterman Row. Austin, thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Austin appears courtesy of the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Thing or Not a Thing next, Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
The Fan wants your vote. Head to 971thefan.com and vote in the fan poll.
Sponsored by Reichert Nissan.
The Fan.
Ohio's sports destination.
Sports talk distilled to its purest form. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Chops in for the Bishop, Laurinaitis in for himself, and Bodie here as well. Thing or not a thing, hit it.
Bishop and Laurinaitis, thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Geico Insurance.
All right, guys, first up, saw this one from Diana Russini of ESPN on Twitter. She tweeted out, just texted with an NFL head coach about the upcoming cuts and what he expects. This was the response she got, quote, it's going to be a massacre next week all around the league. Thing or not a thing?
Well, it's probably a thing. I mean, it sounds like guys are going to be out of a job and there's going to be a huge free agency pool for people to not spend money on because all these teams are probably trying to cut cap because they have no idea. Well, they have some idea, but they know it's going to be lower, this cap situation this year, and they're going to try to find, as James was saying earlier, they're always looking for something new or something cheaper, all that kind of stuff, and just ratchet that up this season.
Yeah, look, it's you have a lot of I think there's a lot of aging vets that are going to be cap hits. You're seeing it, right? Golden Tate, Rudolph. It's going to continue to happen. And this is always a very anxious time for vets because you know once that guaranteed number, and sometimes even with, if it's a small guaranteed number still in the contract, you could be hitting the streets. And yeah, it's just a tough time for those vets because it's a time of uncertainty, right? And it's a lot of moving around and trying to figure out where's my next home, and we're still in the middle, hopefully the latter middle of a pandemic here.
Chris Sims of NBC Sports released his quarterback rankings for the 2021 NFL draft. His top six in order goes as follows. Hang with me here on this list. Number one is Zach Wilson. Number two is Trevor Lawrence. Number three is Mac Jones. Number four is Kellen Mond. Number five, Justin Fields. And number six, Trey Lance. Thing or not a thing?
It's not a thing because I don't know. Is Chris Sims just looking for attention, or does he not know what he's looking at? You have to think, coming from a quarterback family, that he'd know what he's looking at. I think putting Zach Wilson ahead of Trevor Lawrence is mostly just contrarianism, but those guys are, you know, arguably one and two for a lot of people. So to flip them isn't crazy, but Trevor Lawrence is the number one. Mac Jones at three could be defensible if he didn't put Kellen Mond at four. I saw this when this came out. Somebody tweeted that, is this the same Kellen Mond who had a quarterback rating of like 18 in a 20-13 win over 0-9 Vanderbilt, whatever it was, something like that? So I know Justin Fields had some of his struggles this year too, but I don't know where is this Kellen Mond thing coming from? That's the name that he just dropped in there and tried to sneak it in the middle, but not flying for me.
But Chops, he throws to receivers that are more covered than Justin Fields. So
and it's on his second or third read sometimes.
Yes. Very quick decision maker. I think this is a look at me post, because if he just posts out there Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Kellen Mond, what makes him different from anybody else in media? No one's going to pay attention to it. But now every sports station is talking about Chris Sims, right? So now his name is getting poked around. You know, Florio's sitting there loving it, like, yeah, a bunch of clicks on NBC Sports. So I'm not really, no, not a thing. He's just trying to poke the bear.
Got time for one more here. On Tuesday night against the Red Wings, Cam Atkinson scored a shorthanded goal in the first period in the CBJ's 4-1 win. That was Atkinson's 16th shorthanded goal since he entered the league in 2011-2012. That's the second most in that time span, behind only Brad Marchand of the Bruins. Thing or not a thing?
Oh, we love Brad Marchand. I would say that's a thing if you can. Now,
just start the game short.
I can't help myself. I'm not going to make one, but there are obviously easy joke parallels to make with this stat, with Cam Atkinson being good at shorthanded goals. But I'm going to be above it, and I'm not going to make that. I'm going to let you make the connection yourself. But yeah, I think he's leading the league with four this season. But yeah, to have 16 since 11-12, and what was that? It's second most. So yeah, no, that's a big deal. If you can score shorthanded, that's huge, because the penalty kill is something that you focus on so much. And then to have a guy who can consistently score while you're on the penalty kill, I mean, yeah, that's big. So thing.
I just think we take Cam Atkinson for granted anyway, as Jackets fans, with how productive. I mean, this is just another stat and how productive he's been here. But you look over his career and his stats and his numbers, I think we take Cam for granted. So I think this is an awesome thing. It's great to see, and hopefully he tallies some more so that he can pass Brad, because, you know, I don't really, none of us really like Brad.
No, not a fan here of Brad Marchand. So good to see that from Cam, and he's been hot.
Another name,
now,
by the way, that you can go either way on. Marchand, yeah. Marchand. All depends on who you listen to.
Yeah, but he, I don't really care what he has to say. I'll say it the wrong way if he ever clarifies.
B-Rad.
Up next, we got some updates this week on high-profile quarterbacks who have had recent surgeries. Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Good morning, I'm Matt Andrews. Cleveland Cavaliers lost to the Pacers last night, 114-111, ending the five-game winning streak. Cleveland led by as many as 19 at one point. Indiana outscored the Cavs by 11 in the fourth quarter. Colin Sexton had 32 and 10 assists. Pacers had 6 in double digits, led by Malcolm Brogdon with 29. College hoops last night at Penn State. The Nittany Lions blew away Minnesota 84-65. Gophers now 500 at 13-13. Northwestern scored a home win over Maryland 60-55. Buckeye Hoops will host Illinois at Saturday. We'll hear from Buckeye senior C.J. Walker and Kyle Young a little later on today. The OSU women leave later today for their season finale at Rutgers tomorrow. Blue Jackets in action tonight in Dallas. Start of a two-game series. Puck drops at 8:30. We'll have coverage after the Buckeye show at 8. Cam Atkinson with goals in 8 of his last 11. Breaking sports news when it happens with a Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Two men complaining about first world problems.
You're not getting the point, kid.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Chops in for Bo, hanging out with James for one more hour. We've got a good hour for you. We got some NFL talk coming up right here at the bottom of the hour. A little Shelly time with Jody Shelly, as the Jackets are in Dallas to take on the Stars tonight. Sorry to inform you that Faceoff is at 8:30. But good news, you can at least listen to it on the Fan. Maybe put your head down, just turn on the radio, listen to Bob McGilligan bring you the Jackets noise while you drift off to sleep. That's an option for you. So this segment is something I've been workshopping for the last 2 days, and it's going to be a blind speculation, no truth to it at all type segment. There's some reporting to it. But on top of it, what we're going to say at the end is all my opinion. I'm not even going to say it's your opinion. You can offer your opinion if you want. But we're getting these updates throughout the season, throughout the offseason, and all three came in this week. I don't know if that's just that these surgeries are coinciding to be in similar time frames, or if they like feel like, oh, if the news is out about one quarterback progressing through surgery, we should get news about our quarterback. And they're probably, if you take into account steps in your career, these are the three quarterbacks, the highest profile named quarterbacks at each step of your career. Maybe there's a fourth step in between Mahomes and Brady because nobody is a peer to Brady at this point, you know, as far as longevity and what he's done in the league. But we'll start there at the top. Tom Brady, he had a knee surgery that supposedly just to clean something up. As Nate Davis said yesterday, we had him on, that like, do you want to clean up your knee? Like, do you want to have that surgery? I don't. So So the fact that they were calling that routine, but then the Boston Globe comes out, and the thing about the Boston Globe report for me was it came out and it was like, it's going to be a little more than a cleanup. And then it added like, and that'll only add to the legacy of Brady. And it's like, it sounds like you guys are longing after an ex-girlfriend a little bit too
no
much.
Doubt.
Like,
no doubt. No doubt.
Like, we chose wrong.
It's like the angry parent, right? That's yelling at Robert Kraft.
You chose wrong. You chose wrong going with Belichick over Brady.
Exactly.
And we want her back.
Anyway. Yeah.
So Brady's supposed to be out at least 4 months and expected to be ready for real drills in June. Where is your concern level with this one?
Look, you never want any quarterback getting there's no such thing as an easy scope, for one. If you have to go under the knife, you're altering the human body from what it once was operating at full capacity, right? So you never like to see it. Am I concerned that this will affect his play next year? Not at all. The guy just won a Super Bowl with no offseason. You know, with his guys, he's going to miss till June. He'll come back. He'll be fine. Camp, I'm assuming things will be better. Maybe it's a dumb assumption out of me, but I'll be assuming things are better by August. And, you know, we'll probably have preseason games back. So I'm not worried about Tom Brady and his knee scope.
Yeah, he's come back from injuries before, and he's just a completely different type of animal when it comes to anything in the NFL. There's just, like I said, there are no peers at this point to Tom Brady. We keep thinking Father Time's going to get him. That won't get him. He can go to a different division, not even a division, a different conference, take over the Buccaneers, who weren't any, you know, they were fine, but they weren't anything special, and immediately get them to the Super Bowl. I don't know what to say about Tom Brady. So until I fully see the cracks, or maybe not even cracks, because we've seen cracks before and he somehow just, you know, spackles them up and he's fine. Until I see something fully break and he doesn't look good for an entire season, I have no reason to question anything Tom Brady does, because everything he does
with that defense, he has an elite defense there too. So even if he's rusty early on, that defense was a massive reason.
And he doesn't get hit
either.
They
won the Super Bowl, you know? So yeah, I'm not too concerned about the Buccaneers and Tom Brady.
Up next, the younger guy who has already won a Super Bowl, already won an MVP, and he seems like the person who's going to be in charge of the NFL from a quarterback standpoint for maybe the next decade. The Chiefs certainly do. They're giving him $500 million. This one probably doesn't seem too much, but for me, a little bit, it's the accumulation effect. So a turf toe injury that clearly affected Patrick Mahomes, especially in the Super Bowl. Everybody could see that. That was the big story of the Super Bowl, was that, you know, he wasn't making any excuses about it, and good for him, but it was clearly something that was bothering him. So he has that. They're expecting him to be back, possibly for mandatory minicamp, at least by camp. So he's probably got the longest outreach here, just trying to get that toe right. And they're probably just making sure it's fully healed and everything. But for me, I'm a little concerned about injuries stacking up for Patrick Mahomes as his career goes on. He missed some time last year with a knee injury that he came back from in, you know, otherworldly time that we didn't think he'd be back that fast. He was back
the way it looked, right?
Yeah, he was back within a few weeks. He battles through this turf toe, and then he has surgery in the offseason. Is this something? Does he have to change maybe how often he runs or how often he drifts in the pocket, maybe taking hits? What does this see for Patrick Mahomes for you?
Yeah. So for me, it's weird to say because he's younger, right? So you think, oh, he can recover better, faster, all that. And he has showed to be, you know, a great recoverer. I will say this, though. I'm more concerned with Pat's than I am with Tom. The reason being is this turf toe and his legs affect Pat's game more. Not that Pat can't just sit there in the pocket and carve you up. He's shown he can do that. That is Pat, yeah, too. But part of his brilliance is his ability to improv, do that backup, you know, 20 yards, roll to his right and run, you know, throw it on the run to where you just, your jaw drops and you're like, holy smokes, did he just do that? And so when he's limited, like he was in the Super Bowl, you saw what can happen. He's not the same. So turf toes are tricky. I've had turf toe. My toe that I had turf toe on, I never had surgery on it, but the one
what
I have.
What exactly is it? I know the injury, but I don't know what it is.
It's basically, it's what it feels like. I don't know the scientific it's something to do with the joint of the big toe and the ligament running underneath it, but it prevents, it's extremely painful, like something is stabbing in your toe when you bend it back. So running or planting your foot and going, right? Mm-hmm. That flexion of the toe, the big toe, is excruciating. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll put like an orthotic under your shoe there or in your shoe that is almost like steel, so it won't bend. So it's like you're running, but you're not actually letting your toes bend.
You're like splinting
back.
Your toe.
Yes, and that's a way to kind of get around it. They'll tape your toe on its own like little separate splint. You know, they'll tape it and try to – there's all these things they try to do for it, but it just sucks. There's nothing more annoying than turf toe.
And it sounds like a lingering injury that
lingers.
You just can't get
still,
rid of.
Still today, when I do lunges,
yeah,
my natural reaction is to, it doesn't hurt nearly as bad. It's uncomfortable more than anything. Not that I want to say it's painful, but it's uncomfortable. It's not painless. But like if I do a reverse lunge to where I put my left foot back and I have to consciously keep my ankle straight to prevent from rolling because I don't want to naturally bend my left big toe. So mm-hmm. I can do it if I focus really hard on it, but it's not natural for me to even do because of all the years of pain that I had while I was playing on it.
Yeah. And obviously you can't focus real hard when you're playing a football game. So this is something that he has to get done. And you're right. Yeah. It limits something that he does that makes him special a lot more than Tom Brady's knee would. Tom Brady's knees probably don't feel good at all, but he doesn't really use them like other athletes do.
Yeah.
He's got that down. He knows how to stay in the pocket. He doesn't get hit. So yeah, Patrick Mahomes is a little more concerning. And just as these injuries, you know, are we going to see a new one every year with him? And eventually the body will break down. He's young. You're not young forever and you can't just come back from every injury unless you're LeBron James. You're never hurt if you're LeBron James.
That's right.
The third one, coming in, rookie, he's going to be basically, I'm almost 100% certain that he's going to be the number one overall pick, especially because this surgery was pushed up at the behest of Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that pretty much tells you everything. But Trevor Lawrence, labrum, non-throwing shoulder, 5 to 6 months for him. So a little longer to recover, but they probably, you know, taking every precaution there because they don't need him. They wouldn't even need him at the beginning of the season. It's not about this year with Trevor Lawrence. So just letting him come back at his time. But the fact that it's non-throwing shoulder, again, he's even younger than Patrick Mahomes. I think he'll be fine. But I just thought it was something that all three of these huge, high-profile quarterbacks, surgeries in the offseason, and we all get updates for them in the same week.
Mm. I think, buddy, with Trevor Lawrence, I'm not concerned on the left. It's the left shoulder. You want to talk about the ultimate smokescreen would be, you know, Urban telling that story about how he encouraged Trevor to get surgery and move his pro day up and then take Zach Wilson number one. That would be an ultimate smokescreen.
And then nobody's evaluating Trevor Lawrence for this whole – I mean, they are, but you obviously can't evaluate him in person.
No, I think I'm not concerned. It's a non-throwing shoulder, and I think that's fine. But, yeah, I think that's –
And his wasn't even like something you noticed it really bothering him as he was playing. It's probably just something that they, you know, we just said this is stupid, but it's more of the like, just get something right. It, you know, it's not, we won't use the word cleanup, but it's not something that held him out of games. It's just to get him more right.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's something that, it's nice that he addressed it now. it's because you're able to that left shoulder isn't going to prevent him from throwing. You know, like, I think that honestly, some of the stuff will. He can be, I'll put it this way, his right shoulder he can continue to strengthen. Now, he's not going to be launching bombs, right? But he can continue to strengthen this thing.
Yeah.
The throwing arm, and he can go through footwork and mental stuff as he gets closer to that five-month date. But this is something that, I'll put it this way, you shouldn't not be concerned at all, because if he felt it was in enough pain to look at it and say, no, I need to undergo surgery here, that's a different deal. You know, it's like when I went to the physical therapist at the Cleveland Clinic, you know, as far as a routine kind of checkup thing, and we're talking about my hip, and I have some bone spurs in my hip that have formed through the years. And he's like, well, I mean, how much pain are you in? I'm like, I don't know. Some days it sucks. It's annoying, but I don't know. He goes, all right, well, when you get to the point where you're in a lot of pain, you know, we can shave those off. The problem is it's just a six-month recovery because it's your hip. And I'm like, well, no. Then now my pain tolerance just went through the roof. You know what I mean? Now I have a whole different perspective versus a little cleanup. So
does your finger hurt? We could cut it off.
Yeah. So the shoulder obviously hurt to a point to where he said it's 5 to 6 months rehab. And he said, no, that's worth it. I need this to feel better. So it's not nothing, but I also think because it's a non-throwing shoulder, it's obviously better.
Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to hit while we're talking about these quarterback surgeries, did you see this story about Terry Bradshaw, 38th anniversary of this happening back in 1983 yesterday?
I did not, but his show is quite entertaining, but I have not seen this story.
So in 1983, that was before his final season with mm-hmm. the Steelers, and he had an elbow problem that had been bothering him the previous season. He needed to get surgery on it, and he went, and it was supposedly going to be minor, but he tried to come back too soon from it. That it aggravated it. He didn't play until very late in the season in 83. He only threw 8 more passes in his entire career after this surgery and then retired. And now he's Terry Bradshaw, every football fan's grandfather, basically. But the real interesting
part about
– or
crazy uncle, whatever you want to –
the real interesting part about the story is he got it in his hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana, and he was a pretty big name by 1983, Terry Bradshaw. So he went under the pseudonym at the hospital of Thomas Brady.
Oh, it's amazing.
Right?
That's amazing.
And he's confirmed this did happen. This was somebody, you know, turned this up. And it apparently is a story that people could have found out a long time ago. It's like public record type stuff, but nobody had fully connected the dots until this week. And it was on the 38th anniversary of that surgery yesterday that he goes under Thomas Brady to get his surgery. And then that's another like connection there. It's like, it was seemingly minor, but it was the end of Terry Bradshaw.
It's amazing. What do you have surgery on? His arm?
Elbow, yeah.
Elbow, yeah. Well, I mean, think about it. It's Ben Roethlisberger.
They said it was like tennis elbow, but on the inside instead of the outside, or the other way around. It was something.
I don't know.
Let's
get Rothman on here. Let's have Rothman jump on early. I'm sure he has tennis elbow along with his back problems and his hips. Yeah.
And then isn't it so Bradshaw to like he's supposed to be out for like 4 months, and after like 2 months, he's like, "Nah, I feel great," and start throwing
great.
Again.
Go out there and your arm falls off. Ah. Yeah, it's still Bradshaw.
All right, there you go. So there you have it. Don't worry about Tom Brady. Don't worry about Trevor Lawrence. Patrick Mahomes, maybe a little bit of worry. Up next, Browns GM Andrew Berry spoke to the media yesterday. We'll go over some of what he had to say next on Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
Bishop and Laurinaitis is presented by Window Nation. Searching for a replacement window? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
A linebacker and a man of leisure.
This doesn't even make sense.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis, we'll be talking to Jody Shelley here in about 10, 12 minutes. But first, we're going to go over the Browns. They put up their front guys this week to go out there and give you a status of what's going on in the organization. And yesterday, the media got to talk to GM Andrew Berry. And the first one I want to go over, what he had to say, he's talking about Baker Mayfield and his fifth-year option.
I think you know me well enough that that's not something that I'll really talk about publicly. You know, we've been pretty consistent with our messaging around Baker that we think he had a really strong season for us. We like the maturation and the growth both on and off the field. And we're looking forward to him continuing to take steps his second year in the offense.
That's great to hear. So they might, you know, they're just taking their time or whatever. But I'm going to go to a surprise pivot for you, James, because Baker Mayfield tweeted something last night. And I think
UFO.
The Browns, I think the Browns better lock him up to a contract before he gets taken by somebody else that might be extraterrestrial. Here's Baker Mayfield from last night at 11:40 p.m. Almost 100% M and I just saw a UFO drop straight out of the sky on our way home from dinner. We stopped and looked at each other and asked if either of us saw it. Very bright ball of light going straight down out of the sky towards Lake Travis. Anybody else witness this? You'd have to sift through a lot of these tweets because it's probably just people trolling him to say if they witnessed
it. I love all the tweets after. Reading the comments of that have been absolutely enjoyable.
Baker just throws that out there. You know, the wife and I taking a walk, we saw a UFO. Did anybody else see it? Like, how did he think that was going to go over? Nothing good can come of that from a starting quarterback in the NFL putting something out like that. Like, he's just going to get dunked on. But maybe he is that kind of guy. He has that kind of wry personality. Maybe he is just trying to have some fun. But I thought I would share that from Baker Mayfield.
I think he saw what he thought was a UFO and people are running with it. And obviously, no matter what, you can say anything on the Soch and you'll get blown up. I love Andrew Berry's take on this. They have been very consistent. I think at the point last time I remember reading or hearing Andrew Berry comments about Baker was back during bye week when they basically wouldn't commit that he was their long-term solution. Because remember he was kind of saying, we're evaluating, you know, it was bye week, we evaluate everybody.
Yeah.
And if you know you have somebody at a position, no, there's no need to evaluate him. He's our guy. So there's none of that. I think that after that, Baker played a ton better.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're in a unique position where they don't have to rush on Baker. I don't see any need to rush. Don't get yourself in a Jared Goff situation. You can reward Baker Mayfield, and you can give him a nice contract, but I would not try to give him one this offseason.
Yeah, don't give him one before you need to. You're still going to be in team control of him. And
absolutely.
For me, he's going to need to show me two seasons of this. So we saw it at the end of his rookie year. Then there was a bad season in between. Then there was the end of this year. And if he does it, if he comes in, he's playing at that level or at least close to it, because it's probably a little much to expect him to play at the 15-2 interception ratio level, you know, just consistently off the charts like that. But if he can play close to that level and, you know, throw in what are you looking for? A 35-5 type season, maybe, you know, something in that range, just taking care of the ball, getting touchdowns, getting wins, actually challenging for the division. That's something you want to see out of Baker Mayfield, but you're going to have to see it for another year before you need to rush into anything, because then, like you said, with Jared Goff, it turns around and he has one of those bad years. And now what? Now what do you want to do? Now you have to trade him in two first round picks or whatever to get a different quarterback.
So yeah, I love what they're doing. I love the kind of the pace at which they're taking this. And they're set up. They're set up well. As you look at their offense chops, you just think they need a burner. That's what you need. Mm-hmm. Like, you're missing a burner on the outside at wideout. But that's really, That offense and the system and the way they executed without having an offseason themselves, I expect them to be a more cohesive unit and operating better next year. So, yeah, I think they're on a good spot with six and able to kind of, you know, take their time and rewarding him.
I think they've done a good job building around everything that they have, and most of their free agent stuff from last year turned out to be a win for them. Here's Andrew Berry on how active he thinks he'll be in the free agency market this year.
We always want to be known as an aggressive front office. Now, I think perhaps how people define aggression may vary from person to person to person. That doesn't always mean that, you know, we're going to be heavy spenders externally. I think that we have enough flexibility to adjust and maneuver as is appropriate. You know, if there's a player that we think fits a need and has the right value, I think we have the capability to be aggressive in pursuit. But I also think that we're fortunately in a position this offseason with what we have on the current roster and the overall resources, not just in terms of cap dollars and picks, where we can be very selective and also allow things to come to us.
Kind of what we said yesterday, that they are at a point where it's not, this is a need, we definitely need to get this. It's, Can we add a wide receiver that can take the top off? Can we add a guy to start opposite Myles Garrett that's going to pressure and, you know, maybe take away some of that and give him more opportunities, but also while getting sacks himself? Things like that. They've got cap space, but he doesn't sound like they're going to go crazy and spend it all just willy-nilly. They're going to take a really measured approach because they can, because of the roster they already have.
Yeah, and so I love the fact that he says they want to be – there's a fine line, and I love their mentality of we need to be aggressive. We want to be known to being aggressive, but we're not going to overdo it, right? Because when you overdo it, you set your franchise back. It might look good in the here and now. You win the fan approval. Oh, we went and got a guy. But when you overspend, mm-hmm. and you know maybe you have to throw more guaranteed money, or he sticks around for years too long, and he's not the same player – then you become all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, well, we can't move off of this said player because we overspent. It didn't really, the reward for getting that deal didn't pay off. So there's a fine balance that every GM has to make. Sometimes, very rarely, but sometimes you're in a cap situation to where you have more flexibility to where if you overspend by a couple mil, that's fine, but it's where you're really, I guess, too, hot and bothered to get one certain player to where you're like, I'll get him by any means necessary. That's when you can send somebody back, because as we've seen, football is not a sport that you can get one dude that's going to totally flip everything for you. So I'm not a huge, as people that listen to the show know this, I'm not a huge analytics guy, but at least everyone's rowing in the right direction up in Cleveland, right? They all have the same path. And the problem has been in the past that you felt like GM was going one way, coach another, president wanted to go another way, owner had no idea. So it's just, at least they're all going in the same boat here and going in the right direction.
Yeah, and the only player who actively seems like he doesn't want to be a part of this rising ship right now is possibly tight end David Njoku, and here's what Andrew Berry had to say about him.
We'll explore every available option that becomes available to us to improve the team. That all being said, we're really pleased with our tight end. I think that group did a nice job for us this past year, and it's obviously a focal point in Kevin's offense. And look, I thought David played really well for us last year. He did a nice job with his teammates. He did a nice job with his role within the offense. And look, we think he's a very young and productive player.
It's similar to the situation Baltimore finds him in with their right tackle. It's not that he doesn't want to play for the Browns. He just wants to be the guy at tight end for the team is on.
Yeah. And think about it, in his career, like there is you have a dual idea and you have agents talking to you and all this as well. But think about this. You have an idea of, I think I'm the main guy here. Like this guy has gone from being the tight end, right, in Cleveland, mm-hmm. assuming he was going to get paid by the Browns because of the last regime, really liked him, right? And so you think, I'm going to get paid. Your agents tell you, hey, maybe we had conversations with the last GM. We're gonna take care of you. New regime comes in, free agent signing. Oh, and you draft a Mackey Award winner, and now you're in a rotation. You deal with injuries.
You go from number one to number two, but you're tied for number two.
Yes, yes. And so that means less targets, less opportunities to get production, to get signed there or elsewhere. And so now you're ultimately chopped in a situation to where, yeah, I want to win, but I want to win while getting taken care of on my second contract. And so that's the battle that everyone faces in this. Like, I'm trying to shine, but I also do want to win, but I want to shine, get paid, and win. And you're trying to find that
yeah,
sweet
and be
spot.
The, yeah, be the guy when I'm in my prime.
Of course. We all want to contribute to the reason why our teams are winning.
Yeah. So there you have it. They might deal him. There's some talk that, you know, maybe they could sign Kyle Rudolph if they do get rid of Njoku, and then bring Kyle Rudolph in to round out and have that same feel to their tight end room. So we'll see what the Browns do and keep you updated all off season long. A little Shelly time ahead of the Blue Jackets at the Stars tonight. Bishop and Laurinaitis on the Fan.
Check your watch, Jackets fans. It's Shelly time with Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Sponsored by Moomoo Express Car Wash, proud partner of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
James Laurinaitis and Chops in for Bo today. Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline is where we're headed right now for a little Shelly time with Jody Shelly. How about that They get things going with fans in there on Tuesday, Jody, against Detroit. And that's where I want to start. What did you see from the players? Did you see noticeable differences in them responding to having at least some crowd there? And now it's going to increase the next time they're home.
Yeah, I really did, Chops. I mean, you could see the excitement. And we talked, I talked with Bo and James on last game day. And, you know, we talked about eyeballs on them. I mean, they want to, they're performers. They want to put on a show. And, you know, the fans did a great job. They were louder than you would expect. Just over 1,900 fans were in the building. They were spread out, but they were effective. We had the CBJ chant. The Blue Jackets had a nice cushion there in the third period. It was a feel-good night. And then I just think that's exactly what they needed. So the energy from the fans. Plus, you know what? Yarmo spoke. Torch spoke. There was a lot of airing out that happened. And it was a perfect time to have that new energy in the building.
Yeah, Jody, and that energy should be there tonight, too. What was it, 4,500 fans or something like that down in Dallas that will be allowed? Heck, if it's up to the governor, the place would be packed. But I'm just wondering, that is, I think, perfect timing for this Jackets team. You mentioned the fans at home, what it means to them, but to have fans on the road, and again, it's eyeballs, isn't it? Just eyeballs looking at you, some guy giving you the bird that if you were feeling okay for the game, but now you're like, okay, all right, now I want to score, and I want to do a fist pump, and I want to look right at him. You know, like there's some kind of motivation that can be sparked by it. Don't you think that this road little, the two-gamer against Dallas is kind of perfect timing for this team to come together?
Yeah, and I like the one-off home with Detroit. You know, they get the win, they feel good, now they're out there. Dallas is struggling. They've had a few things to deal with. They had a terrible February. I think they might only have two wins in the whole month of February. So they're reeling a little bit. A lot of their quotes are the same. But, yeah, I like this because, you know, exactly right. When you're in the opposition's building, sometimes you get more energy out of ruining the party. You know, it starts high, all the lights and that. And then you get a couple quick goals and you're like, yeah, sit down and relax because we're gonna make you guys sit down the rest of the night. There's motivation there in a number of different ways. That's why I think it's so important. And I think that's something we forgot about. We talked about it, but I was glad to see it and really understand it. That, yeah, it is a massive deal when you're in a huge, open, empty building trying to be a player at the top of your sport. You need to have the fans there.
Shelly time with Jody Shelly on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. You mentioned that there's some, you know, they were having to air some things out. Yarmo talked and Torts seemed to not like to talk about it, but at least answered the questions when asked about it. But my question is more about Yarmo. When he says that he believes in Torts and his staff, that they're the right group of guys to get through. They've done it before. We've seen slumps that this coaching staff and this group has been able to find their way out. Do you think that's something where in Yarmo's head there's certain benchmarks he already has out there, or do you think that expectation is constantly evolving in the evaluation of Torts and the team?
I think it's evolving. I think that, you know, it's such a day-to-day, minute-to-minute, second-by-second for Yarmo and what he's dealing with, you know. New things come up. New things have to be dealt with. The first part of this year, he's dealt with so much off the ice, on the ice, trades. He's been busy, and now his team is in flux a little bit. So it was good of him to come out and say that, because if you're a player in the locker room, you know what? You're looking at the coach, and you're waiting for – you're wondering because you're hearing the rumors. You know he's hearing the rumors. You're just wondering what's happening. So when the leader comes out and takes – ownership and leads the way, it settles everyone down. Now it's up to the coaching staff to actually get the team out of this. And that's the onus on it. Say, okay, you know, he's endorsed the coach and this is where we're at. But now he trusts them, so let's see what they can do. And that's kind of where it puts them. They're all in it together. They're all dealing with every circumstance that everyone else is dealing with in this league. Now they've got to find a way to get the most out of these players, because Yarmo put the team together. Torts is the one to get the ball rolling with the group. So now they've got to put the action into place.
Yeah, Jody, we played some sound from Torts earlier in the show that I thought was enlightening, in the fact that he said, I liked how the game was a little more free and open against Detroit, because we've played some teams, and I'm loosely quoting, but basically we've played some teams that have been a little more physical checking us that we haven't been able to work through. And it kind of dawned on me as I listened to it, this was an identity of a team that used to be that squad, right? Like, you wanted the physical, let's go out in the backyard and let's scrap kind of game. Am I looking too into it that Torts was basically hinting that this team maybe wants to play a little more free, a little more open, and really not that way? Or is it just that they're struggling to play that way or play those teams right now?
No, I don't think he's got the makeup of the team he had the last couple of years, where it was there was players that were big and strong and hard to play against. Players that when they had the puck, you probably weren't going to get it off them. And now they've got players, Bemstrom, Roslovic, who play a different style. Roslovic is in the middle now. He tries to keep plays alive, where sometimes maybe he shouldn't. He doesn't have the frame of Dubois to protect the puck or the snarl. He's a much different player. Those are real factors. I mean, you're looking at it and with a realistic view, and that's the right way. And, you know, you also have to remember, James, the West has played differently than the East.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. The West is big, forechecking, hard to the neutral zone, and a lot of board battles. And we're in the division here in the Central where you have a mix of a few Eastern teams and a few Western teams. How do you match up with them? Well, it's been very interesting. With Chicago and Nashville, it hasn't been great. Dallas, it hasn't been perfect either. So very interesting how it matches up. Much more free-flowing game when you're in the East. I'll tell you a story. When I was in San Jose, I got traded to New York, and in practice, John Tortorella had us practicing drop passes at the blue line. I hadn't done a drop pass on the blue line since I was peewee, and I was kind of giggling, like, wow, okay, this is way more creative, way more free-flowing. So it's just a different mindset. There's a different attack. There's a little more ice in the middle to play with, and that's something where I'm not sure that this team on the walls, they've figured it out yet. It's like they're getting jammed in their own end because the big defensemen are jamming down on them. They've got to work through that.
And so a really quick follow-up on that then is people need to understand as fans, I think, and I brought this up to Bo earlier in the week, Yarmo and Torts have built this roster to play in a certain division. And because of COVID, everything has been kind of thrown a wrench in, and you just talked about that. I mean, we kind of need to keep that perspective when we're evaluating this team, don't we? That this team, I mean, we did that in football, right? When I was in St. Louis, we were built to win the NFC West. Once you won the West, then you made the playoffs. Okay, if you do that, then we can look at the rest of the NFC, then we can look at the NFL. But you're built to win your division to make the playoffs. Everything's been kind of thrown a wrench in because of COVID. So I think we need to kind of evaluate that when we're looking at the Blue Jackets this year before we start saying, you know, the teams they're playing are not usually who they're built to compete with.
Hey, that's a very good point. And I never thought of that with football, but you guys are built differently for each division. And for the Blue Jackets, I think you're just – when we're in the Metropolitan Division – you know, there's excitement with those teams, but there's excitement in matching up in the way they play. It's a copycat league, though. When a Stanley Cup champion is handed out, it's usually, you know, the next team responds. How do you get to be like Tampa? Well, they got older, stronger, deeper veterans that helped them get over the hump. Look at St. Louis. They had a big veteran-laden team. So there is a little bit of resemblance of Tampa and how they got stocked up eventually, as you said, to your point, to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. But right now, I agree. We are in between. This Blue Jackets team is in between what they want to be and what they need to be.
Shelly time with Jody Shelly. Jody, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Cops. You have the great work as a host, buddy.
Thanks, man.
We'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good one.
Maybe I'm better as a host than I am as a producer based on how often you guys throw shade at me.
Unbelievable.
There. No, I think I cut it. Hey, Bodie, cut that. Put that somewhere. We need to play that all the time just so we can make sure it's out there. There you go. Jody Shelly, he'll be on the call tonight. CBJ at the Dallas Stars. That face-off is at 8:30. You can also hear the game right here on The Fan. Three things on a Thursday next on Bishop and Laurinaitis on The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Metro Heating and Air and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Bo is well-groomed. James brings the boom. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis here on a Thursday. Chops in for Bo, hanging out with James and Bodie today. And I will say this, despite the Jody Shelly endorsement, I think we are a very, very long ways of me Wally Pipping Bo out of the show. I think we're safe.
I'll text them soon, and I'm going to say Chops just basically is trying to self-promote his way to co-host of the show.
Chops and Laurinaitis coming at you.
That's what I think he needs to know.
I'm sure he's going to be very concerned while he's sipping a bourbon on the beach.
That's right. He sent me a photo of of Bootsy in the ocean last night, and I was like, gosh, good for you guys.
He seems right at home there. I love going down to the ocean. I hope to do it sometime again soon. Well, time for three things. Hit it, Bodie.
Three things with Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
Speaking of having fun in the ocean, vacations, and being a kid and stuff like that, I think this is just like, you know, the child inside me kind of coming through and stuff, but I don't see why every single plastic cup isn't color changing. It's just more fun. Let me throw you a scenario. Yesterday, I take a green cup out of the cupboard. I don't know this cup, but I take it out. I pour some orange juice in it, and it turns blue where it's cold, stays green where it's not, and it's orange in the cup. We got a multitude of colors. A color-changing cup is just more fun. If it's going to be plastic, let's make it a color changer.
I mean, okay. All right, that's what Chops is going for today. My first thing, tried out the new Town Hall down on High Street downtown. Look, it's elite. If you eat like I eat, it's just beautiful peace of mind to be able to order anything on the menu, and they have a dietary adjustment for you. Well, the job well done. We took Remy out last night, just the three of us. It was a great time, so I highly recommend Town Hall.
Can you make it more unhealthy? Can you go that direction?
You can, but like for instance, like I consider myself having a cheat meal last night. So I got they call it the keto fried chicken. So why is it keto? It's gluten-free. It's basically a gluten-free breading on it, and it's fried in avocado oil instead of normal peanut oil because avocado oil has a high burn point and is anti-inflammatory, not inflammatory like peanut oil. And then the sides are like Brussels sprouts and cauliflower and stuff. But anyway, yeah, you can make it what you want, Chops. You can get
quite the cheat meal there.
Yeah. You like that?
Really against the grain there, James. My first thing, so I saw that World War Z was trending on Twitter this morning. I'm like, what's this about? Click on it. Apparently the CDC sent this out. They sent out a zombie guide just in case it happens. I don't know. That's kind of a weird thing, I guess, for the CDC to be concerned about. I don't think we're going to have that problem anytime soon. But I will say, not that I'm rooting for it, but if we do, the amount of hours I spent playing zombies on Call of Duty World at War and the Black Ops and Black Ops 2, I think I would be extremely, extremely good at this. I wouldn't I try not to pat myself on the back for too many things. I don't think I'm good at a lot of things. But if a zombie apocalypse ever happens, I think I am very prepared. I'm not rooting for it, but if it happens, it happens. I'm ready.
Bro, the amount of
CDC, maybe not the time.
Not the time with the big discrepancies and opinions on these vaccines being flushed out quick. Not the time to have a zombie guide.
My second one, Johnny Manziel was on Chris Long's Greenlight podcast, and he's apparently Johnny's just saying the fan control football is just kind of like pickup football. He's just having fun. This is his next goal. He's giving himself 12 years to play professional golf. Apparently he's got like a handicap that's close to his scratch or whatever it is. I don't know golf. Doesn't matter. I'm all for having dreams and that's great, but why 12 years? That seems like a really odd number to just pick 12 years to give yourself time to do something, but more power to Johnny Manziel. I hope he finds himself as he gets further into his adult life.
Yeah, Johnny does nothing odd, you know, like playing in a fan-controlled football league after winning a Heisman Trophy and all that. My second thing, I was on a group text that started right before the show with a bunch of my old teammates at the Rams, and I had to mute it because the amount of dinging that was going on and seeing my phone vibrate and light up. And so I just looked at it for the first time. We're talking about over 100 text messages. And what the hell my teammates are doing right now, or former teammates, most of them retired, I have no idea. But come on. I don't want to. It's getting out of hand. That's all I can say. It's getting out of hand.
Group chats tend to.
My group chats with my friends are either completely dead or, like you said, just off the rails. There's never really an in-between.
No, it's always off. Yeah, I'm with you. It's like either no one wants to really be a part of it anymore,
yes,
but no one wants to say it, or everyone. I'm like, what is going on?
Number two for me, I read this story this morning on ESPN. I thought this was pretty cool. Beginning this year, on June 2nd, MLB, they will begin having an annual Lou Gehrig Day. Just try to bring some awareness to the ALS, just a nasty disease, obviously just kind of a sad thing because we really don't have like any way to fight it that much, unfortunately. But I thought that was pretty cool. And I thought it was really cool too because basically this whole thing like got started this year by people who either have had ALS or, like, you know, family members, people who were kind of affected by it, by like a family member or friend or something like that. They basically just like got together and kind of created this group and like pushed this message and got it to the MLB to start this year on June 2nd. So I thought that was pretty cool.
All right, our third thing real quick. One, for me, I thought it was, you know, supposed to be pretty easy to, like, people needed dogs to be adopted. Like, there's a lot of dogs who need home, and J-Lo and I are having a really hard time. She can't even, like, get through to people. You call their number, and it's the message box is full. So maybe we're going to have to talk to Rothman to help us out finding a pup.
There you go. My third thing real quick. It's really preventable, but I can't seem to prevent it, is keeping damn chapstick out of your pocket and putting it in the dryer. The amount of chapsticks I've melted over my life is astonishingly high.
Last one for me. Happy four-year anniversary to Michael Jordan today, 4 years ago at the halftime of the Duke-North Carolina game. The famous phrase, the ceiling is the roof, was born. Still doesn't make any sense 4 years later, but it's still kind of cool because, hey, Michael Jordan said it, so it's got to be cool.
Well, when Chops is hosting Bishop and Laurinaitis, the ceiling is the roof. We're going to see if we can hit that ceiling tomorrow. Rothman and Ice will carry you through until 3 o'clock. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while. Call